squarely on the shoulders of Keir Starmer. So tell me, how big a problem is the Mandelson scandal for the Labour government?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a criminal investigation's been launched into allegations Lord Peter Mandelson passed market-sensitive information to the paedophile financier Jeffrey Epstein. The former Labour minister's quitting the House of Lords tomorrow after emails in the Epstein files suggested he shared confidential details. Sir Keir Starmer says it is the right move as Lord Mandelson let his country down. Lib Dem leader Sir Ed Davey says there should be an inquiry into Lord Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to the US.
Well, there'll be senior civil servants, people in number 10, the Prime Minister's chief advisor, Morgan McSweeney, and there may be others, to make sure people who have really done our country a disservice are held to account.
Prince Edward's become the first member of the royal family to comment on the latest Epstein revelations.
It's all really important always to remember the victims. And who are the victims in all this? A lot of victims in this.
He was speaking on CNN during a summit in Dubai. In other news, a 15-year-old boy has been charged with the murder of a 16-year-old in Wiltshire. Shane Hambaka Chair was stabbed in Chippenham on Saturday. Earlier, his father paid tribute to a brave and bold young man and the hospital staff who tried to save him. There'll be a formal investigation into Elon Musk's X and its chatbot Grok for its creation of sexualized deepfake images. X says it has made changes to prevent this from happening. Meanwhile, Spain's Prime Minister says he plans to bring in a social media ban to protect under-16s. In France, there'll be a ban from September. It's already in place in Australia. The US military shot down an Iranian drone that approached its aircraft carrier in the Arabian Sea. The vessel is part of an American military build-up as President Trump considers whether to strike Iran again. Iran's supreme leader has warned the United States that if they start a war, this time it will be a regional war. Violent and extremist inmates will be kept in US-inspired supermax prisons under new government plans. The Justice Secretary says the measures in England and Wales follow a review into the attack on guards at Franklin Jail in County Durham. In the city, the FTSE 100's closed down 26 points at 10,314. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.16. LBC weather, rain and hill snow becoming confined to the north tomorrow, drier further south, some brighter spells developing, mild in the south, rather cold elsewhere, a high tomorrow of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It's 2 minutes after ten. Hello there. A very, very good evening indeed to you this Tuesday night. Welcome to Ben Kentish here on LBC. Lots and lots for us to talk about over the next 3 hours. On tonight's show,
rich men have thought they were bigger than governments before, and it never really ends very well for them. If governments act, if they coordinate, if they take it on, they can do it.
British authorities open an investigation into the ex-AI tool Grok, while in Paris the company's offices are raided by French police. Just how much trouble is Elon Musk in? Look at that later this hour. And
the countryside is something that is gatekept by a majority white community. The ethnic minorities don't feel like they fit in into that space.
The government says it wants to find ways to make the British countryside less white and help people from diverse backgrounds to spend more time in nature. Is that a load of woke nonsense or actually a really important effort? Talk about that after 11 o'clock. Plus,
lovely family next to us on the table, but there was a baby there and I turned to my husband and I said, well, that's going to be an issue in about 5 minutes. And sure enough, scream, 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 scream.
Fury today after one TV star suggests that parents should pay for a babysitter rather than taking their noisy, disruptive children to restaurants and ruining the experience for everybody else. Do they have a point, though? Your calls on that a little later.
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
We start tonight with the latest revelations and allegations surrounding Peter Mandelson and the confirmation this afternoon that the Metropolitan Police will open an investigation into whether there was illegality in the accusations that Peter Mandelson leaked confidential, market-sensitive government documents to his pal, the prolific paedophile Jeffrey Epstein at a time when Peter Mandelson was serving in the cabinet as business secretary under Gordon Brown. The fallout from the allegations in the revelations and the allegations in the Epstein files continuing today, dominating the news agenda at Westminster, as it will tomorrow when the Conservatives hold a debate trying to force the release of even more documents. We'll talk to one politician in just a moment to get his perspective on what needs to happen now. But I'm really interested in your thoughts on just how damaging this whole sorry saga, this really sordid scandal, has the potential to be for this Labour government. Because it is the Labour government, of course, that is having to deal with the fallout, but it's also the Labour government that's having to deal with the questions as to why it appointed Peter Mandelson as our US ambassador in the first place. And I thought there was a really interesting kind of defence from Keir Starmer today. He is obviously under pressure about that decision. He told his cabinet in a meeting this morning that Peter Mandelson had let his country down. Well, nobody's going to quibble with that, are they? But then Keir Starmer added this fascinating sentence. The public don't really see individuals in this scandal, Keir Starmer told his cabinet. They see politicians. And I think he's right in part to say that a lot of people will interpret these events as just the political class behaving as the political class does, rehabilitating, protecting, standing by people who had behaved in such a way that their career should have ended abruptly a very long time ago, ignoring the evidence when it was presented to them, dismissing it, finally realising far too late that actually there was a problem here that needed dealing with. We've seen this time and time again. And we've seen it in the career of Peter Mandelson, how many times he was brought back despite having had to resign in disgrace on previous, or be sacked in disgrace on previous occasions. It's an absolute kind of case study in how people in positions of power too often protect their own, even when the evidence suggests that to any decent, reasonable-minded person, they should be doing the exact opposite. So true in this case. So I think Keir Starmer's right to say a lot of people will just see this as the latest kind of sign of, you know, Westminster having a massive problem with scruples and integrity. But I don't think people are going to buy this kind of attempt to shift the blame, to suggest that this is just another sort of sordid Westminster affair. Because this is a scandal that directly implicates this Prime Minister. It was this Prime Minister who appointed Peter Mandelson to one of the most prestigious jobs, in fact, the most prestigious job, probably, in our diplomatic service. It was this Prime Minister who was asked about some of the allegations about Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein and chose to ignore them. It was this Prime Minister who barely more than a year ago was making chummy speeches extolling the virtues of Peter Mandelson being our US ambassador. So Keir Starmer might say, yep, this is a plague on all our houses. And it's true that other parties have had their fair share of sleaze. I mean, Boris Johnson was Prime Minister this time 4 years ago, for goodness sake. But I don't know if this buck-passing exercise by the Prime Minister is going to hold. And I'm really interested in your thoughts on whether you do just see that you roll your eyes, you say, oh, they're all as bad as each other, aren't they? Or whether you think this Mandelson scandal has the potential to be a really significant problem, not just for politicians in general, despite what Keir Starmer says, but for this Labour government specifically. How damaging do you think this is to the government? How big a problem has Mandelson become for Keir Starmer? 03456060973, the number for your thoughts on that. Let me know how much damage you think this is doing and whether it's changed your perceptions of the Prime Minister, the people around him and his government, or whether you agree with him that it's just a sort of, it's just the latest indication to you that politicians really aren't behaving in a way that we would like them to behave. That number once more, 03456060973. We'll speak to the Shadow Attorney General in just a moment. First, though, Lina Barber joins me, former editor at the Financial Times, now author, broadcaster and co-host of the Media Confidential podcast. Lina, very good evening to you. Good to have you on the show. I mean, most of us, I think, have just been less stunned by the allegations against Peter Mandelson, despite his track record of, you know, misconduct in office. What's your take on everything we've learned in the last couple of days?
Ben, I agree with you that this raises very serious questions about Keir Starmer's judgment and his chief of staff, Morgan McSweeney, who is a Mandelson protege. It's clear from the emails, which I've looked at, that Peter Mandelson is guilty of forfeiting or betraying the trust of his Labour cabinet colleagues and the trust, betraying the interests of the country, because based on those emails, he was passing sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted sex offender. Now, there is a bigger picture here, and we shouldn't lose sight of this, despite everything you say, which is correct, about how serious this is for the Labour government. This story is about the corruption of the elite.
Yep.
Jeffrey Epstein had an extraordinary network. So people who are involved are like Bill Gates, Larry Summers, the former Treasury Secretary, billionaires, celebrities, lawyers, academics, even some journalists.
Yep.
They were all captured. So this is nectar. This is fuel for all the people, the populists, who say the whole system is corrupt. That should worry us all. Now, if we just zero back to Britain and the present government, this is a really serious matter, because as you can see, Gordon Brown, the former prime minister, made a complaint months ago in which he called upon the cabinet secretary to investigate what Peter Mandelson was up to and his relationship with Epstein. And there's one specific deal at the time, the sale of Royal Bank of Scotland banking assets. We're going to hear a lot more about that. So that nexus, that financial self-dealing, Mandelson's connection with Epstein goes way beyond being photographed in his underwear in Epstein's apartment. It's much more serious.
And it was interesting, Lionel, wasn't it? Again, the Prime Minister coming out and saying today that he sensed there might be more to come, which is, you know, pretty ominous when it comes to Mandelson himself and the Labour government. You know, as you say, rightly, this implicates people right across the global elite and the British elite in particular. Is it a bit unfair then that so many fingers are being pointed at Labour and Keir Starmer? Because yes, they brought him back and made him ambassador, and I've been pretty clear what I think of that decision. But it's not like it was Keir Starmer or Rachel Reeves or David Lammy that were hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein. So is it a bit unfair that they're having to deal with all the kind of, they're having to clear up all the mess?
Well, not really, because the Prime Minister, he's the top man. And he made the decision, based on advice, to appoint Peter Mandelson, who's a known quantity, let's face it. I mean, he was the architect of New Labour. He's a very brilliant, suave political tactician. But he has baggage. He has more baggage than a Boeing 707. And Keir Starmer and Morgan McSweeney should have done a proper vetting exercise. Mm. They did not. I would draw a comparison, Ben, with the Profumo affair. I know there are some differences. Peter Mandelson isn't lying to Parliament. But this is about reckless behaviour, the compromising of information, and the way in which the government, it goes beyond one minister or ex-minister. This goes to the heart of the government, to the Prime Minister. It's very serious.
It's very serious indeed. It is. It absolutely is. Lionel, thank you for coming on. Lionel Barber, former editor at the Financial Times, now an author, broadcaster, co-host of the Media Confidential podcast. Also, of course, completely avoidable. I mean, Keir Starmer chose to take this risk, as Lionel says. Peter Mandelson more baggage than a 747. Why on earth did Keir Starmer put himself in a position where it was always very likely to come back and bite him very firmly on the bottom, and as it's proved politically? So he's only got himself to blame. How big a problem do you think this is for the Labour government? Is it, as my colleague Andrew Marr was positing the question earlier today, is it the final nail in the coffin for Labour's re-election hopes, or is that overdoing it? Is it unfair to hold Keir Starmer responsible for ultimately what is a systemic failure as well? 0345 600 973, the number to call. Let's talk about it more with Ben Maguire, Shadow Attorney General for the Liberal Democrats and the MP for North Cornwall as well. Ben, very good evening to you. What needs to happen next after the revelations of the last 48 hours?
Yeah, can I just say, first of all, Ben, that my heart genuinely goes out to the victims in all of this. Mm-hmm. And I just feel so genuinely angry on their behalf that we're just seeing this drip, drip, drip of information every day, which really brings shame on our country. Actually, I really don't say that lightly, but I feel ashamed to see what I've been seeing the last few days. A senior minister, the de facto deputy prime minister under Gordon Brown, leaking what essentially is state secret, sensitive market information to a convicted paedophile. He knew that Jeffrey Epstein was a paedophile at the time he was corresponding with him. And those emails actually make me sick, to be honest with you, seeing the sort of pally, matey tone that Mandelson had with this convicted paedophile and sharing secrets that he had privileged access to.
That's what those emails seem to suggest. The police are investigating. Mandelson, as far as I'm aware, hasn't denied them. But, you know, there is an investigation ongoing. But yes, the emails would absolutely seem to suggest that's what happened from what we've seen so far. So what should happen now? What needs to happen next?
I heard your previous guest, Lionel, talking about how widespread this has been among various parts of the establishment. And I actually had a young constituent, teenage constituent, come up to me recently at a sixth form college visit that I did, young female constituent. And she genuinely asked me, because obviously this has been in the news 24/7. She said, Ben, do you really think Andrew, former Prince Andrew, will ever face justice for the purported crimes that we've seen, the allegations? I know they're not proven, as you pointed out.
Denied, yeah. But yes,
will they be investigated properly? Will they be investigated properly by police? Will a rigorous investigation take place? So when you ask what should happen next, I know we're talking tonight about Peter Mandelson. There has to be a thorough investigation. And the Liberal Democrats have been clear today. There has to be a full public inquiry on this. Because as your previous guest pointed out, it's not just Peter Mandelson. It's not just the former Prince Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. This goes across mm-hmm. many, many establishment figures. And it's really quite sickening, but it's also really disturbing. We need to make sure this never happens again, and that senior ministers with privileged information are giving it away potentially to our adversaries. Jeffrey Epstein had links to President Putin of Russia, President Mugabe of Zimbabwe. Yep. We must make sure this never ever happens again.
But there's now a police inquiry, Ben. There's a police inquiry. There's a Cabinet Office investigation that Keir Starmer has asked for. Is that enough? Do you feel that the response from the authorities has been sufficient to what we've seen revealed or alleged?
I honestly don't think it is, Ben. And my constituents just don't have confidence in some behind closed doors investigation by the Cabinet Office.
So what needs to happen instead?
Well, I've mentioned a full public inquiry needs to happen, which can compel witnesses. It's really important that they have the power to compel witnesses to come forward, give evidence.
You know, is this going to go the same way as the Chilcot inquiry, the COVID inquiry? We might get some answers in 2042. That's the way public inquiries in this country tend to go, isn't it? So is that really the best way of getting to the bottom of what's gone on here?
I completely agree. We've seen some very long-running inquiries which don't often get to the bottom of the issues. I'd like to see an expedited hearing with very specific terms of reference that could be done very rapidly and could conclude by the summer. But the point of that is to compel witnesses to come forward and, crucially, to have transparency so that all of the documents are disclosed by the government, all of the relevant documents, because as we heard from Keir Starmer, it sounds like there's more to come. So rather than this constant drip, drip, we need a proper public inquiry where all the documents, all the information is provided so that the public can have trust and confidence in our government again, because it's a really embarrassing day internationally. I've spoken to friends and colleagues in Australia and the United States, and it's really become quite a laughing stock, actually. I know it's not a laughing matter, but as a country, we've really become quite a laughing stock. When you look at this unelected House of Lords that Peter Mandelson's been sitting in, and it's taken until today where he's voluntarily stepped down. What an embarrassment.
Would
our upper chamber, unelected, unaccountable. We've had this guy, Peter Mandelson, who's been found, by the way, for the third time in deep, deep trouble. Well,
can I ask you about that,
Ben? Scandal in the 90s. There was a loan scandal in 2015.
Let me ask you about that, because I was making this point on the programme last night and a bit again tonight, that yes, this says a lot about Peter Mandelson. It says a hell of a lot about him. It says something about Keir Starmer's judgment and those around him. But it also says something really, really quite disturbing about the Westminster political system, of which you're a part. I'm not blaming you for this. But what do you think it says about how our politics works? That, as you rightly point out, Peter Mandelson was sacked, brought back, you know, mired in sort of scandal and sleaze for long parts of his career, made ambassador to Washington, finally sacked again. What does it say about the system that somebody with that amount of allegations of misconduct and so on against his name was able to have a, what is it, almost 30-year successful political career?
Yeah, it's a really, really sad indictment on our political class, our political establishment in this United Kingdom. And the fact that he was caught in a loan scandal in the 90s, then again in, I think, 2015. Why was proper due diligence not done? I saw Emily Thornberry this morning talking in the media that her committee offered to do proper vetting, proper due diligence. It's obviously a huge embarrassment for the Prime Minister. He needs to get a grip on it. But you're right, it does, it sadly, have a really bad sort of indictment on our political establishment. And I'm afraid to say that has been amplified even more by the pathetic sort of unfolding of events that we've seen in the last few days. We've seen the emails, we've seen the photos of former Lord Mandelson, and it's taken today until for him to actually resign voluntarily. Why is it that our upper chamber is governed like that?
He was allowed
it's an embarrassment. It's a national disgrace.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to disagree, but he was allowed to leave the Labour Party voluntarily rather than be kicked out of it. We've had to wait for him to voluntarily step down from the House of Lords because nobody has the power to boot him out. There's a complete lack of accountability, which I think is one of the things that needs to change. Thank you, Ben. We're out of time, but thank you for coming on. Ben Maguire, Shadow Attorney General for the Liberal Democrats and the MP for North Cornwall as well. Your thoughts on how big a problem this will prove to be for Keir Starmer and the Labour government? 0345 6060 973. Or is it unfair to hold this Prime Minister responsible for the actions of one man?
Call the Cabinet on LBC. Put your questions to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting. Tomorrow from 1 p.m. with Sheila Fogarty.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Nothing beats that just booked feeling. Because when you book a jet-ski holiday, you start dreaming of pool days and seeing the sights. Get ahead for summer. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person. Choose from our best rooms and hotels and save £200 per couple. Nothing beats a jet-ski holiday. Package holidays you can trust. Aptra Natural Protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
People ask me, what's my good place? Wild swimming with the girls on a chilly spring morning. And knowing that with PensionBee, I can choose to invest in line with my values, which is why I picked their climate plan.
Last one in by blood!
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 10:22. Ben there was saying he feels pretty angry about what we've learned in the last couple of days about Peter Mandelson. I feel pretty angry about it, to be quite honest with you. I wonder if you do. And if you do, is your anger just directed at the whole of the sort of political establishment, who, you know, have all got sort of questions to answer about the conduct that we're talking about here? Or is your anger directed more specifically and more targeted at Keir Starmer and the Labour government for the way that they rehabilitated Peter Mandelson? 0345 6060 973. Who are you angry about in all of this? Obviously, Peter Mandelson. I think we can all probably agree on that, given the allegations against him. But what about the rest? Who else bears responsibility and culpability for what we've learnt this week? And how much of the blame do you think should fall on Keir Starmer? 0345 60 60 973 for your thoughts on that. Let's talk to Michael in Eastbourne this evening about it. Or Michael, how badly do you think this reflects on Labour? Or is it not a party political issue, do you think? Evening.
Oh, hello, yes. Well, I think it reflects extremely badly on Peter Mandelson. I'm a Labour supporter, and I detested Peter Mandelson from the first time I ever set eyes on him, like 30 years ago. You know, the same I detested Boris as soon as I saw him. But as far as Sir Keir's judgment is concerned, Trump's second election changed everything, absolutely everything. So we are dealing with, well, we know what we're dealing with. But my opinion of Peter Mandelson, the first word, as I say, 30 years ago, the first word that came into my head was smarm. And other people could interpret that as political nous, but to me, it was smarm. Mm. And when you've got someone like Trump in the White House, you need the Prince of Darkness, and you need some smarm to deal with him. Now, I want to make it absolutely clear, I'm not saying any of this to exonerate him, but what I am saying is I want to exonerate Sir Keir. Because, I mean, who else was there? What was the other choice?
We had a perfectly good ambassador already in Washington called Dame Karen Pierce, who had impressed a lot of people, apparently had pretty good relationships with the Trump administration. I don't buy the argument that there was nobody that Keir Starmer could have given that job to, other than the guy who had a track record of hanging around, associating with and defending prolific paedophiles. I don't buy it, I'm afraid.
Yes. As I say, I haven't come on to defend Peter Mandelson.
No, but you said you wanted to exonerate Keir Starmer, and that's where I think we're disagreeing, because I think that the decision by Keir Starmer to appoint Peter Mandelson, given everything we knew at that point about Mandelson, was absolutely disgraceful, frankly. It's an absolutely disgraceful thing to do. This guy should be nowhere near public life, and we knew that much back in 2024 when Keir Starmer decided otherwise.
Yes. I can't disagree with that. But are you saying,
Michael? Go on.
I don't want this to be the thing that brings the Labour government. We waited 14 years.
Do you fear it might be, as a Labour supporter? Do you fear this might be the final nail in the coffin?
Well, it will be if the BBC and LBC, we've got to stand up to the right-wing press and the red tops and say, look, yes, this happened. Yes, it was mistakes in judgment, but they've done such good stuff.
What, like what?
The health service.
Is that much better than it was 18 months ago?
I believe so, and waiting lists.
It's down slightly.
What else have they done? Yes, but how many, we've had six Labour governments.
But what else have they done, Michael? I mean, they've had a year and a half now. What else have they done?
Well, look, I'm not a big fan of, I was going to say Keir Hardie. I'm not a big fan of
Michael, yeah. Just to hammer the point slightly, I mean, you said there's loads of great things we've done and we should focus on that instead, but you've only been able to tell me one of them, which is to get waiting lists down slightly. Fair point. What else is
5 million? Isn't that big enough?
I don't think it's down by 5 million.
Well, appointments, I mean.
Ah, fine. Okay, all right. Improvement on NHS waiting lists. Fine. I'll give you that. What else?
But what I'm saying is that we've had, what, six Labour governments in the whole history of Britain.
Yes.
And if Peter Mandelson is the one to bring this one down,
I don't think it is just that, Michael, because they were languishing in the polls before all of this study coming out. I think for the reason that you slightly proved there, that a lot of people don't feel they have done a great deal. They haven't delivered the sort of change that they promised. Yes, NHS waiting lists are down, but often when people say Labour's doing all this great stuff, and you ask, you say, well, like what? It's not abundantly clear what that is. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate the call this evening. Let's talk to Eric in Glasgow. How damaging is this for Labour, do you think, Eric? Or is it actually a wider problem that Keir Starmer's having to bear unfair responsibility for? What do you think?
What I think is the man is a very educated gentleman. And he has served his country well.
Who are we talking about?
Peter Mandelson has also served his country.
He served his country? Which bit of allegedly leaking confidential documents to a paedophile and encouraging the head of JP Morgan to bully other cabinet ministers constitutes serving this country well, Eric?
I think he served his country well. And I'm going to speak about this gentleman. I'm going to speak about him just now. Okay. As a gay man, as a man who's also served his country, has been to Iraq and fought a war, seen a war, like me, okie dokie, this gentleman has got some problems that needs to be addressed. Now, never mind his sexuality. His sexuality doesn't never...
It's irrelevant. It's nothing to do with this. Absolutely nothing to do with this.
It's got nothing to do with this. Exactly nothing to do with this.
So how has he served his country well then, Eric?
Could have been provoked.
Sorry?
Provoked, antagonised.
Let's go back. How has he served his country well, Peter Mandelson?
He was a front man for LGBT rights.
Was he?
You do your homework.
So what, we should sweep everything else under the carpet because he was a campaigner for LGBT rights?
Certainly not sweep on the carpet for LGBT rights. I'm not saying that.
What about defending and continuing to be friends with Jeffrey Epstein after his child abuse had come to light?
There's no excuse for child abuse.
Glad we agree on that.
And I've been subject to it as well. Okay,
so, right, and I'm sorry to hear that. So what's the defence for standing by and actually in giving support and help to people who have been convicted of child abuse? That's unforgivable too, isn't it?
That's very unforgivable. However,
go on.
I'm going to speak. Hang on. However, at least he had the gumption in the bottle to say, in the past few days, my hands are tied, I was wrong in what I did.
Eric, he hasn't. I'm sorry, he absolutely has.
Hang on.
He described those emails that appear to show, and this is being investigated by the police, but they appear to show him leaking highly confidential government documents to his mate, the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. He said he shouldn't have been brought down by a few misguided emails. He's not contrite. He still doesn't get it.
Can you give the man a bit of leeway?
Deserve leeway? What has he done throughout his long political career to deserve an inch of leeway? I can't believe you're defending him, Eric.
Come on. Is this the United Kingdom of Great Britain we're in?
Sorry?
Is this the United Kingdom of Great Britain we're in?
Yes, it absolutely is, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah. Okay, dokie.
All right, Eric, we'll leave that up. Fair, you're entitled to your opinion. I think you're in a minority of possibly one, sir, respectfully, when it comes to defending Peter Mandelson. But thank you for the call, Eric. Always good to have you on the show. Interesting. Do you agree with Eric? We need to cut Peter Mandelson some slack? All he did was, you know, defend a notorious child abuser and allegedly leak loads of government documents to his child abusing mates. Cut him some slack. It's a view. 0345 606 0973. Talk more about that in a couple of minutes' time. Plus,
on the anniversary of the murder of a teenager, a report found multiple missed safeguarding opportunities at his school. I'm LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown with the story.
Bring the details on that heartbreaking case just after the news headlines with Darrell Jackson.
Lord Mandelson will face a full criminal investigation into allegations that he leaked market-sensitive information from Downing Street to Jeffrey Epstein. The former US ambassador, who's denied wrongdoing, is stepping down from the House of Lords. A 15-year-old will appear in court tomorrow, charged with murdering another teenager in Wiltshire. Shane Hambacher died in hospital after being attacked in Chippenham on Saturday. And there'll be a formal investigation into Elon Musk's X and its chatbot Grok for its creation of sexualized deepfake images. X says it has made changes to prevent this from happening. LBC weather, rain and hill snow becoming confined to the north tomorrow. Drier further south with some brighter spells developing. Mild in the south, rather cold elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC, coming up on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Tomorrow morning with Nick Ferrari at Breakfast, Lord Mandelson will be investigated by police over allegations he leaked confidential government emails to Jeffrey Epstein. It's a scandal that has rocked British politics, but has Keir Starmer well and truly failed in his mission to restore trust to public life? Nick will put that to Wes Streeting with the Health Secretary live on the show to unveil the government's national care cancer plan. All that and more coming up with Nick Ferrari at Breakfast tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock, here on LBC.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. LBC.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Everything dinner at Ocado. Save on sausages, tinned tomatoes and get a great price on garlic. Then splurge on the fancy pasta. The kind you know you're pronouncing wrong, which means it must be good. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Select lines only, geographical restrictions, minimum spend and charges apply. Offers end 24th of Feb. Terms and offer info at ocado.com/terms.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning. Listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Now, I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started. Total amazeballs.
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices Quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 10:36. Let me come back to your calls on Peter Mandelson just before we get the very latest on the report into the killing of Harvey Wilgoose, raising some pretty serious questions that we'll talk about in just a moment. First, though, let's talk to Paul in Liverpool about Peter Mandelson and who you think the blame falls on, Paul, apart from Mandelson himself. Is it Keir Starmer or is this a wider issue? Evening.
Well, yeah, Keir Starmer and a wider issue also. It all come from recently from the States. Our country, our government has been well aware of what got released, being brushed under the carpet. And also, Keir Starmer is an advocate. He knows the law inside out. So, in our law system, you can't say, I didn't know about it, because not knowing about it is not a defence. So, also, if no one's got the confidence has gone in the government with Keir Starmer, and I think he should resign.
You think he should resign specifically over this?
Of course.
Why? Why, Paul? Why is it a resigning matter, do you think?
Say it again.
Why is it a resigning matter?
Because he's got he's weak, no confidence. He's known what was going on and beforehand. What's been released from America, he's all well known what was going on.
To be fair, yes, Mandelson's association with Epstein was known, but the stuff that's come to light this week about allegations of leaked emails and so on, and the true extent of their relationship after Epstein was charged, wasn't public, at least, at the point that he was...
You think he must have known about that, Ben? Come on.
Well, it depends how much vetting they did. And what's coming to light is maybe they didn't do enough, which you might feel, Paul, is a resigning matter in and of itself.
Well, we didn't know. Starmer should resign for not
knowing. So you say it's either incompetence if they didn't know, or if they did know, then it's even worse.
Well, you've known, and they've kept it quiet. And they weren't expecting to get released because in their country recently, freedom of speech sort of disappeared. So it's come out from America. Well, some stuff has, isn't it?
That's a whole new conversation, Paul. But Paul thinks it's a resigning matter. I don't know if I go that far, but it certainly doesn't reflect well on Keir Starmer, does it? What do you think? 0345 6060 973. Lovely to talk to you tonight, Paul. Thank you for the call. To Wanstead, Sophie's on the line. Evening, Sophie.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Sophie. Paul, they're saying Keir Starmer should resign over this. Should he?
I am amazed. That man is a Houdini. I'm amazed he ever came back after all the other scandals. Who said there was something of the night about him? I can't remember, but it's so appropriate. But also, and obviously we don't know the level to which he was involved or if he was involved. It has to be, investigated with Epstein. But there's one thing, a slight off-piece comment. No one has called this carnage and the man who headed it a grooming gang. Now, I don't want to make it about race, but Epstein, the vile, disgusting, revolting man, obviously exploited, attacked, sexually assaulted young women. He plied them with drink, probably drugs, allegedly, and enticed them. And the groups in the north of England were immediately picked up.
That's because they were actual gangs, whereas this was one man and his associate Ghislaine Maxwell. It wasn't a gang, Sophie. So it was certainly grooming, but it wasn't a grooming gang, because where's the gang?
We can use it in a wider context, Tom. You know what I'm trying to say.
Why does it matter?
It matters because then the likes of Nigel Farage come out with revolting comments about Asian people, ethnic minorities, immigrants. And the thing is, I'm not excusing in any way, shape or form the disgusting, revolting things that those people did.
All right, so say we describe Jeffrey Epstein as being part of a grooming gang. I mean, does that make it worse?
He is.
So, why does that language matter, though? Why does it matter if he was part of a gang or if he was just a notorious child abuser? I don't see the significance of it.
Because that inflammatory language makes people turn on each other.
It's not inflammatory. If there is a gang of people that is grooming, it's a grooming gang. If there is one very wealthy billionaire financier, then he's not a gang. I mean, it's just a factual description. There wasn't a gang of people. There wasn't a gang of Jeffrey Epstein. There was Jeffrey Epstein. And Ghislaine Maxwell as well. So I think we're sort of arguing a bit about semantics here. I don't see the significance of, and I don't think it was a grooming gang, because for the simple reason that it wasn't a gang. Thanks for the call, Sophie. We'll come back to whether or not this reflects badly on Keir Starmer or just the whole political establishment in just a moment. First, at 10:41 the time. Let's talk more about the news today that the family of a teenage boy murdered at his school in Sheffield are calling for mandatory record checks for pupils who move schools. Today marks 1 year since the death of Harvey Wilgoose, and a new report has found the number of missed opportunities in safeguarding at the school where he was killed. LBC's Yorkshire correspondent, Alex Taylor-Brown, reports.
Can't believe I haven't seen him in a year. I can't stop, and that's what's keeping me going.
The Wilgoose family, they've described the last 12 months as a nightmare. On the 3rd of February 2025, 15-year-old Harvey Wilgoose went to school and never came home. He was stabbed twice in the chest by fellow All Saints Catholic High School pupil Mohammed Umar Khan and died. Harvey's mum Caroline has been telling me about the last time she saw her son.
Just seeing him go out of the door and him saying, "I love you, mum, shut the door behind me." And then Mark's mum ringing me to say, "Something's happened to Harvey," and then Mark screaming down the phone, he's been stabbed.
Khan, also 15, was sentenced to life in prison in October for murder, with a minimum term of 16 years. Now, a report into safeguarding at the school has found a number of missed opportunities, culminating in Harvey being stabbed. The family's solicitor, Yogi Amin, explains.
There were gaps in policy, there were failures to implement government guidance, there were serious shortcomings in record keeping that meant weapons related concerns and escalating behaviours were not acted upon effectively.
The family say the report states Khan had 130 incidents relating to violence against his name before moving to All Saints. Whilst at All Saints, there were instances where he was reported to have carried a knife in October 2024, whilst his own mother found an axe in his school bag in December that same year. The report, commissioned by the trust that runs the school, says these were not acted upon. For Caroline and Harvey's dad, Mark, they say if they were, their son would still be alive today.
100%.
Yeah.
If they'd have done what they should be doing, Harvey'd still be here today. And that's, I think we all feel that.
I mean, that's the worst for me. There was 130 incidences at the other school, but then All Saints still took him on.
They're calling for mandatory record checks for pupils moving between schools, which the report says All Saints did not ask for before Khan was transferred. The trust says it has made rigorous changes to safeguarding since Harvey's death last year, including updated search protocols and plans for pupils involved in knife incidents, as well as regular meetings on violent incidents. The report is not being released in full by the trust due to what's being described as sensitivities. A year on, the family are taking time to reflect and to remember Harvey.
Cheeky chappy, funny. I hate him being known as the child that got stabbed to death at school because he was so much more than that.
LBC's Yorkshire correspondent Alex Taylor-Brown with that heartbreaking report. In a moment, come back to your calls on whether it's fair that Keir Starmer is getting so much of the blame over the Peter Mandelson scandal, or whether he is right to say that actually all politicians are the ones that will get the, we'll have to deal with the fallout of what we've learnt this week. 0345 6060 973 to join our conversation. The time has just gone, 10:45.
LBC this morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Lord Mandelson, the latest developments there, possible police involvement, possible passing on of sensitive information. Catherine Baroness McLeod, who was special advisor to Alistair Darling when he was Chancellor at the time when these emails were allegedly passed on.
Well, I don't know if he sold secrets to Epstein. He certainly gave them away, and I think it's reprehensible.
Minister for Secondary Care at the Department of Health, Karen Smith.
I think we're all shocked about the revelations in those emails, and it is right that the Prime Minister took action to make sure the Cabinet Secretary does investigate.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
People ask me, what's my good place? Checking out the food trucks on the weekend with my partner. And knowing that Pension B helped me combine my pensions into one easy-to-manage plan.
Tacos?
Tacos.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
On your marks, get set, go hybrid. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. More oomph
than a Friday feeling and smoother than your last online date. More confidence, more go in a new hybrid engine with 0% APR representative over 24 months. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. Go on. Visit your local Toyota centre. Price from £21,595. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 31st March 2026. Optional final payment indemnities may be required. See website conditions apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with Ben Kentish.
It is 10:48. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC. Talk to John in Paris and Ewan in Edinburgh in just a moment. Let's first see what tomorrow's newspapers are making of the latest Peter Mandelson revelations. The Guardian leading with the news that the Met will open an investigation into Mandelson over alleged Epstein email links. They've got a picture on their front page of Peter Mandelson out shopping with Jeffrey Epstein in a new image released from the Epstein files. The same on the front of The Independent. They lead with Keir Starmer saying that Mandelson let his country down. It's a different picture on the front of both The Times and The Telegraph, a pretty sort of sickening image of Peter, a sort of smirking Peter Mandelson, having a foot massage done, what looks to be having a foot massage done by an unnamed, obscured woman. Lord Mandelson appears to receive a foot massage in an undated picture released by the US Department of Justice. Their headline, Mandelson facing full criminal investigation. Same photo on the front of the Telegraph. Brown accuses number 10 of cover-up. Former Prime Minister goes to war with the government over Mandelson's leaked emails to Epstein. This isn't going to help Keir Starmer, is it? Someone he's sort of, you know, used as a mentor in the past, a former Labour Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, dragging Britain's most senior civil servant into the Mandelson scandal, questioning why he failed to launch an investigation last autumn when Gordon Brown raised concerns about the allegations of leaked documents. The Mail headline, evidence that damns Labour's dark lord. And the I newspaper, last but not least, police investigate Mandelson over number 10, after number 10 hands over Epstein dossier. In fact, not last, but at least a couple more to do. The Daily Express, Edward's call to remember the victims of evil Epstein. Prince Edward urged people to remember the victims of sick paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Well, yes, quite. If he's that concerned about the victims, maybe he should be speaking out publicly urging his brother to do the right thing and give evidence to Congress so that those same victims that are the subjects of Prince Edward's apparent concern might actually get some justice at last. That's what the, I think, all members of the royal family should be saying. We believe Andrew should be going across the Atlantic and testifying. That's what they could be saying. No sign of it so far. And last but not least, the Sun exclusive story reporting that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor was booted out from Royal Lodge, his former residence, under the cover of darkness on Monday night, earlier than expected after a slew of new revelations about his links to Jeffrey Epstein. How much is the fallout from all of this damaging the Labour government in your view? 0345 6060 973. John's called from Paris to talk about exactly that. Hi, John.
Hi. Look, Peter Mandelson, he's been hung out to dry here. It's as simple as that. He has served his country for a very long time. He's a very smart guy. He could have made more money elsewhere. Now, Peter Mandelson, we all know his sexuality. He wasn't grooming kids. He wasn't interested in sexy women or having sex with women. We know his sexuality. You know his sexuality.
Yes. Peter Mandelson's gay. Listen, I'm not sure the significance, John, but go on.
If it was about him handing over some information about bailouts, every single person in Britain and in the world knew that the banks would be bailed out. It was no secret. Now, how is it that Priti Patel, who was caught out for serving a foreign power, Israel, and having secret meetings in Israel.
No. She wasn't caught out for serving a foreign power. She was caught out having undocumented meetings, you are right, with the Israeli government. That does not constitute serving a foreign power.
We would not accept a soldier doing that, would we?
You think...
John,
we have to have a conversation here. I hear the point you're making. You are trying to tell me that Priti Patel having undeclared meetings with the Israeli government is worse than continuing to defend, stand by and support a prolific paedophile, are you?
Is that really what you're telling me? If Epstein had been brown, Muslim or black, that would be the first thing you focus on.
Excuse me?
But because he comes from a religion.
What
you
on
work
earth
for,
are you talking about?
You are not willing to talk about it.
What
start
on
to ask questions
earth are you talking about?
When you next go to the Israeli embassy, buddy.
John, honestly, this conspiracy, this is not... How did this guy, honestly... This conspiracy nonsense is going crazy. You're talking about Peter Mandelson, John. You're just off on some half-baked rabbit hole nonsense about Israel. My God, can we make sure this guy never gets on this show again? I'm sick of these mad conspiracy theories about Jewish people. Get him off air. Goodbye, John, and don't call ever again, please. Let's talk to Ewan in Edinburgh with hopefully a slightly more sensible, less mad perspective than we just heard. Ewan, hi.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm just sick of these sort of... Is everything about the... Is it all about the Jews? Is it all about Israel? You know, crazy stuff.
I feel sorry for you, man. Like, you're getting a lot of really crazy callers tonight, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, no, it was only him, to be fair. Well, honestly, it's just conspiracies are everywhere now. But anyway, let's back to the subject at hand, Ewan. Peter Mandelson, how much of the blame do you think should fall on Keir Starmer?
Honestly, a fair bit. Now, okay, I'm not just saying this because I'm not a fan of Keir Starmer, but first, right off the bat, Peter Mandelson is obviously, look, he's associated with Jeffrey Epstein, right? So basically, Peter Mandelson should be hung out to dry for this. It's disgraceful what he's done.
Yes, it is. So, but
absolutely.
How much of that culpability falls on Keir Starmer?
I think Keir must have known a little bit of that. I think Keir knew what he was doing when he put Peter Mandelson in this position. So in my opinion, I don't think we should just give Keir a pass on this, because he obviously knew. Like, he must have known something. I mean, there's no way, like, somebody like Keir, having the knowledge, the intel that he does, he must have known that there was something really off about Mandelson, especially his relationship with
him. He'd been sacked from governments twice before. And, yes, it was 15 years ago, or 20 years ago or so. But still, you know, a leopard doesn't change its spots, is an approach that some people might take. And Keir Starmer said, well, no, he deserves a third chance.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, if this was anybody else, you wouldn't get this.
No, absolutely not. Thank you very much indeed for the call, Ewan. Let's talk to Joe in Elstree about whether it's fair that Keir Starmer's facing so many questions on this, Joe. Or do you think he's got questions to answer? Hi.
I'm looking at a headline from December 2024, just before Trump had a news conference, well, quite a bit before, with Mandelson in the UK, and Trump was asked a question about the appointment of Mandelson, considering his links, and Trump turns to Starmer with a little smile and a wink and says, Keir, I think I'll let you take that. What have you got to say about that?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think Trump knew a good while before this, because I think Trump knew an awful lot about the Epstein file, and I think he had an inkling that something was not right about this Mandelson character. But Trump, as he does, he's very good at putting people front and centre for the world to see and start asking questions, and then later on the details come out. And Starmer has done this to himself. He's really put himself in a very difficult position, and it's not really a defensible position. He will probably fall on his sword for this, because we haven't even had the final tranche of Epstein files yet. The final tranche will probably come towards the end of February, beginning of March. You can bet your bottom dollar there's a whole lot worse than this, and they're probably saving the worst till the very end. And this is all going to blow back spectacularly on people like Starmer, like Democrats, and Trump's going to be sat there in the background smiling, thinking, you fell for it.
You say he's going to have to fall on his sword there. You think Starmer will have to resign over his decision to appoint Mandelson as ambassador?
Yeah, I can't see how he can possibly survive.
Because he's not directly implicated. You know, there's no suggestion whatsoever that Keir Starmer had anything to do with Jeffrey Epstein. He's not implicated in all of this. So why is it this that you think will lead to him having to fall on his sword?
Because that's the nature of the world. That's the nature of politics. People will be baying for blood. Mm. And it's always the man at the top that pays the price. And even if he's not directly responsible, he ultimately will carry the can, because precedent has been set by many presidents and prime ministers for many, many a year.
And he was responsible.
Just the way it will be.
He was responsible for the appointment. That was his decision. Thank you, Joe. Lovely to talk to you tonight. Final word on this one for now, at least. Adam in Crystal Palace. How are you, Adam?
Hi there. Good, thank you. Look, I think, first of all, the joke is completely on Keir Starmer. This appointment from the very beginning was flawed, if that's saying it nicely. You know that he has not been able to maintain cabinet position twice in the past, but because of his dream to reinvigorate New Labour, he wants to bring him on the team. But the guy is flawed completely. He's a disgrace, and these documents reveal how much of a traitor he is to the to our country and our national security.
You think it's traitorous, the behaviour that
yeah,
the allegations
against him? Yeah, this is on treason. And he will be, I am confident that if he went to the police and they were to take it to court, he would be prosecuted for sure.
Well, Adam, we can't preempt the findings of the police investigation, but the fact that they have decided that one should be open, that there is sufficient grounds to open one, clearly... another issue for Peter Mandelson, and another issue for Keir Starmer. You think it's you think it's fair to hold Starmer responsible for this?
100%. I've never liked Peter Mandelson from the very beginning. When I was involved in politics and I was out there supporting the Labour because I was wanting a change of the Tories, when I heard about Peter Mandelson saying things about Corbyn, I knew he wasn't a good person from the very beginning. And this just proves it. And I think behind all of this is a Prime Minister who's not got principles, he's not got values, he's not got a vision, and his special advisor is de facto running the country. And this is what you get.
He relies heavily on that special advisor, Morgan McSweeney. That's true. Adam, there's an old saying, there's an adage, isn't there, that I always think is quite a good life motto. You lie down with dogs and you get fleas. And after appointing Peter Mandelson and defending him repeatedly, Keir Starmer's doing a lot of scratching this week, I think it's fair to say. Thank you for the call, Adam. We're going to move on and talk about other matters, the other side of the 11 o'clock news. I want to talk to you about the government's plan to make the great British countryside less white. This is a plan from the Department of the Environment to try to encourage more people from diverse backgrounds, ethnic minority backgrounds, to get into the great outdoors and start enjoying Great Britain's nature in a way that they say is too often the preserve of white people. So is that a well-intentioned plan or a load of woke nonsense?
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, it's understood Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has moved out of his home in Windsor to the Sandringham Estate in Norfolk. It's reported the former prince left Royal Lodge on Monday night following the release of further files related to convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Andrew has always denied any wrongdoing. Earlier, police announced they'd opened an investigation into claims Lord Mandelson passed on market-sensitive information to Epstein when he was Gordon Brown's business secretary in 2009. He will quit the Lords tomorrow. Former Labour Party political adviser Max Wilson says we've gone beyond lingering questions about the appropriateness of Lord Mandelson's friendship with Epstein.
What I and others have been shocked by is these leakings of market-sensitive information to a financier, somebody who is handling billions of dollars and making market-moving decisions. And the fact that a British government minister at the time was making these leaks is really quite shocking.
Well, Ben Maguire, Shadow Attorney General for the Liberal Democrats, has told LBC this evening there needs to be a full inquiry.
There has to be a thorough investigation. It's not just Peter Mandelson. It's not just the former prince, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. This goes across many, many establishment figures. And it's really quite sickening, but it's also really disturbing. We need to make sure this never happens again.
A 15-year-old boy has been charged with murder over the stabbing of another teenager in Wiltshire. Shane Hambacher-Chair died in hospital after being attacked in Chippenham on Saturday. Two men have died in a light aircraft crash in Greater Manchester. It crashed in a field near Rochdale earlier this morning. Birmingham City Council's leader says the city's no longer bankrupt. The government had to step in over 2 years ago to try and help run it. The authority had a multi-million pound bill after being found to be underpaying female employees. And Arsenal are into the EFL Cup final after defeating London rivals Chelsea over the two legs of their last four tie. They secured a 1-0 win at the Emirates and a 4-2 victory on aggregate. Manager Mikel Arteta says he's feeling joy and happiness.
To take the club, the team, the individuals to the highest level and start to compete for major trophies, at the end when you have the opportunity to see yourself in Wembley, it gives the right reasons to everything that we do. So everybody's obviously so happy and together we're going to try to win it.
LBC weather, rain and hill snow becoming confined to the north tomorrow. Drier further south with some brighter spells developing. Mild in the south as well, but colder elsewhere. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It's after 11 is the time. Hello there and a very, very good evening indeed if you're just joining me here on LBC. Ben Kentish, as usual with you, 10 to 1, Monday to Thursday, if you didn't know by now. Really interesting story in the news today that I would love to get your thoughts on between now and midnight. It involves the government launching a diversity drive to try to make the British countryside less white. This is a plan that's been drawn up by the Department for the Environment. And the aim of it is to try to get more people, or try to encourage more people from ethnic minority backgrounds to get outdoors into nature and reaping the benefits of enjoying the lovely great British countryside, which I always think is I've been lucky. I've travelled to various places. I genuinely think Britain's countryside is amongst some of the most beautiful that I have ever seen in the world. And I have to say, I have noticed that this is a thing. Me and my wife often go on walks in the countryside, not too far from London, easily within a sort of a short train journey. And it is noticeable that you will see lots of other walkers, you'll see lots of other hikers, you see lots of other people enjoying the country pubs, and pretty much wherever you go in the British countryside, almost all of them are white. Even when it's near to areas that are far more diverse. And I've got to say, I've noticed it before. And so clearly has the government, because they have concluded that the countryside as it stands is not welcoming enough to people from ethnic minority backgrounds. And they want the countryside and countryside organisations and pubs and national parks and so on to do more to think about how they might broaden the diversity of the people that are coming and enjoying them. And that has obviously got some people very angry indeed. It's got the kind of usual suspects raging about how this is all a load of woke baloney. Which it might be, in your view. You might think, what a load of complete and utter nonsense. It's there to be enjoyed. If people want to enjoy it, great. If they don't, that's on them. It's not for the government to start enforcing diversity quotas on the British countryside. Or maybe you think it's a good thing that if more people can be encouraged to walk more, hike more, get out into the greenery more, put their smartphones down, walk through a lovely forest, I don't know, then it's a good thing. Is this an important effort to try to encourage more people from all backgrounds to get more in touch with nature and get out into the country more, which is a laudable aim, isn't it? Or do you think this is just sort of box-ticking diversity nonsense? 03456060973, the number to call. You can WhatsApp me on the same number or text 84850 for your thoughts on that. Let's talk about it first up with Tim Bonner, Chief Executive of the Countryside Alliance, who joins me now. Tim, very good evening to you.
Good evening.
Does the countryside in this country have a diversity problem?
But it is very wide. There's no question about that at all, as you pointed out. And I think the aim of this is in many ways the right one. Some of the solutions we're not quite convinced by. Mm. The countryside is a very open place. It's extraordinarily welcome. Whatever background you're from, whatever ethnic community you're from. And it's really important to the countryside that as many as people as possible visit it, because our rural businesses rely on that. And so it would be, frankly, self-defeating to ignore a large proportion of the population. But the idea that somehow we have to fundamentally change, or I think there's an underlying piece in here. We hear this from academics and bureaucrats, blah, blah. Mm. There's an underlying assumption that the sort of yokels out in the sticks are a bit backward, reactionary, almost racist. We had a report last year claiming that there was, you know, that there was racism in the countryside, more so than in urban areas. And I think that almost creates as many barriers as are actually there for many from the ethnic community who want to visit the countryside.
So it's more a kind of stereotype about the countryside that's the problem rather than reality.
Yeah. And we do need to break that down, there's no doubt about that.
Is it that, or are there other factors, Tim, that explain, you know, what you and I have agreed is the reality, which is that the British countryside is overwhelmingly white still, while our cities are far more diverse? What else is at play there?
Yeah, there's the fundamental issue, which is most immigrants from ethnic minority communities have settled in towns and cities, and that is why the countryside is white. I think you do have a high level of immigration in some rural areas, but most of that was from Eastern Europe and relates to agriculture. If you go to the east of England, if you go to Spalding, places like that, you have immigrant populations, but they are European rather than from ethnic minorities. And so I think, yes, you have a situation, and we've talked about it, I've written about it, actually, about that feeling of other, and that, you know, if you go somewhere and the population is over, very much white, and that's the norm, then I think everyone can understand that that's a challenge.
Mm.
But you'd that feel, doesn't mean feel the countryside isn't welcoming.
Yes.
And I think, there's a place for positive... For positive campaigns to break down that barrier, to break down that assumption that the countryside is only for white people. But what I don't think is that somehow fundamentally changing what the countryside is, which some of this verges on, is actually the solution we need. It's about not education, because that sounds patronising, but I think certainly more information and a greater understanding that the countryside is a wonderful and welcoming place. Well, rural communities love people from, you know, they welcome people from everywhere, and that's a message that we in the countryside have to get out and across.
And that's why I think I take your point, Tim, that maybe the kind of way it's been gone about is not quite the right one. But as an aim, as a kind of as a motivation, trying to get more people from all walks of life and all backgrounds into nature, out enjoying the countryside like you and I do, it's got to be a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. As I said at the beginning, the aim is the right one. And I think there is a bit of this which there are many people trying very hard to break down these barriers. Mm. But DEFRA as a whole tends to be an organisation which is keener on telling people in the countryside what to do rather than listening to them. And I think an element of a wider element of working with rural communities in order to break these barriers down, to encourage people, to provide more information. And there are some areas of the country where, if you go to, you know, areas in the Peak District, there are areas where people from ethnic communities have found a place for themselves in the countryside, if you like. Often that is because others from our own community are going there. So that's broken down barriers. But there's no reason that the same thing can't happen elsewhere.
Tim, glad to have you with us. Thank you for your time tonight. Tim Bonner is Chief Executive of the Countryside Alliance. Listening to that was Ava Vidal, journalist and comedian. Ava, good to have you on the programme again. Why do you think the countryside is so white?
Because there's lots of reasons. It's more complex than people would know. I wouldn't particularly want to live in the countryside because I want to go live somewhere where I can get my hair done, where I can get the food I like, where I could get seasonings and stuff that I like. But I work really close. Well, I'm friends with someone who works, on racism in the countryside. She's a writer that I know. And there's just so many different factors that you have to take into consideration. I mean, look, I went to boarding school. I went to school in the countryside. People do stare at you, you know, but c'est la vie. I mean, there's less black people around there. There's less Asian people around there.
Do you think they're more racist? Do you think the countryside is more racist?
Well, I mean, you know, lots of people in the city give them a good run for their money. So, no, I really don't like to say that they're more racist, because I don't like saying working class people are more racist than middle class and upper class people either. There's that stereotype that they're all, you know, country bumpkins. And I think if you are someone who lives around there or you visit around there, they get to know you, actually. So it's not too bad. Mm. There was actually a black man that ended up released from police custody because he had actually been in the countryside and he was accused of doing some crime, and it was like no, and they were like, no, we all saw him, we stared at him, because it's very unusual to see one of them there. So, you know, it can be in your favor. I think it's about accessibility to certain things, but for my friend who lives in Devon, I think for children of colour, people of colour who actually have gone and have settled down there, there does need to be a slight, you know, there needs to be some kind of education. I know there have been mixed race children at school who've, you know, the teachers don't know how to handle racism. The police don't know how to handle it because they're not educated on that kind of thing. So that would make it easier for people
I'm slightly dubious that the reason that, you know, I don't think it's just about locations, because you take the beautiful Yorkshire Pennines, for example, you know, you go for a lovely walk there and you will see loads of people going for hikes and almost all of them will be white. And that's despite the fact that you've got places like, you know, Bradford and Leeds and Sheffield and Rochdale and Rotherham, all these very diverse towns and cities on their doorstep. And yet the white people in those areas are generally going out into the countryside. And for some reason, ethnic minority people aren't ever. And I think, you know, that's an interesting question. It's not a criticism, yeah, it's an interesting question.
It's cultural. I mean,
do you think it is? Yeah.
Probably into the last couple of years, I wouldn't be going to the countryside either. I'm like, why? I don't want to go back there. I want to go because I want to be in the city. I want you to be out.
What do you associate with the countryside, though?
Nothingness. Open air and nice.
Sounds
nothing.
Great to me.
Well, yeah, it does to me now at this age, but 10 years ago it didn't. I think also De Montfort University did a study on it, and they were asking for stuff for people to do in the countryside that we never asked for, you know, and it was hardly going to make friends. They wanted, you know, old-time stereotypes like dog-free zones. You know, who told them we all hate dogs? We, you know, maybe used to, but even within our own community, that kind of thing is changing. Mm. Lots more people my age and younger, I've actually written a bit about this, like black dog owners and how much we absolutely love our dogs. It's just like things have really changed. They're asking for halal food stores. Nobody asked you for that. Most Muslim people, like, will go out, will eat. And if there's not, we're so used to not having halal. You either eat fish or you eat veggie and we're fine with it. Nobody's, you know, to try and force people in the countryside to put halal food stalls for maybe 5-6 people that might come through. We didn't ask for that. I think sometimes when things are, there's studies done and they're not really including the people, you know, who actually live there, who want to visit there. I'm not saying it never happens because there were a group of Muslim women who do, a Muslim hiking group who got a lot of grief for going into the countryside. Right. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. It does. But I do think, you know, better conversations need to be had around it. There's just some animosity being introduced. It's not necessary.
Mm. Does it matter? Because there are people who say, well, if white people want to enjoy going for a walk and people from ethnic minority backgrounds want to hang out in towns and cities and go to restaurants instead, then great. It's up to them how they choose to spend their free time.
Yeah, I mean, but like I said, if there is a case of people are going and they're being, you know, racially abused as they walk through these places, that is different. And I think also, as my friend explained to me as well, that it's to do with a class thing. They're not particularly welcoming of people who move from the city and decide they're going down to the countryside.
But I guess what I'm saying is if people from ethnic minority backgrounds just don't want to go on hikes in the Yorkshire Pennines, then is it, you know, should the government sort of being spending money, drawing up policies to try and encourage them to do so? Or should we just say, well, that's absolutely fine. You know, if you don't like the countryside, don't go there.
Yeah, we could say, I mean, you could do it in different ways. It's not like forcing you to go, but they could say, I mean, I'm sure that loads of people don't go because they're not sure, because it is really beautiful. Like you said, the English countryside is gorgeous.
Stunning.
And yeah, so if they let people know it's out there, then let them make up their mind. But to force no dog zones and halal food stores, no thanks.
Ava, great to have you on as always. Thank you very much, Ava Vidal, journalist and comedian. I guess there's sort of two questions for you this hour. Is this a genuine problem? Does it matter that the British countryside is, you know, we just heard it from the head of the Countryside Alliance, is overwhelmingly white? Is that of any concern to you? Is that of any significance to us? And the second question is, why is it the case? Or maybe that should be the first question. Why is this the case? If we accept that it is, and I think, you know, most of us that spend any time in the countryside would accept that most of the faces you see will be white or Caucasian at least. Why do you think that is? And I'm really interested to hear from people this hour. I don't want to sort of just conjecture. I'd like to hear from some people as well from ethnic minority backgrounds about whether you spend time with your friends and family going to country pubs and long walks and hikes. And if you don't, why? I mean, absolutely, obviously entitled not to. You don't have to justify yourself. But why do you think there is this cultural issue? Why is there this cultural gap between a lot of British, not all, but a lot of British people who do like to get out and about into the greenery and into nature, and people from ethnic minority backgrounds who see that as less of a sort of way that they would choose to spend a Sunday afternoon? 03456060973. Why is it the case that the countryside is overwhelmingly white? And the second question is, does it matter? Is the government right to be trying to do something about it? Or do you just think, let people be? If they want to do it, great. If they don't, why should anyone care? It's their own business. 0345 6060 973. Calls next.
LBC.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
When it comes to retirement advice, the last thing you want is to be put in a bucket. Seen as this type of person, or that type of person. At Fisher Investments UK, we never put you in a bucket. We always tailor retirement advice that's just right for you. Fisher Investments UK, retirement advice that's as individual as you are. Learn more at fisherinvestments.co.uk. Investing involves the risk of loss. Fisher Investments UK is regulated by the UK Financial Conduct Authority.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 11:19, your call's coming in. Why is the countryside so white? The evidence is there that it is. And if we accept that that's the truth, does it matter? Is it a problem? Sean's a new caller tonight in Reading. Welcome to the programme, Sean.
Thank you.
Good to have you on. What made you pick up the phone, Sean?
Yeah, I was just listening to the radio and it was quite interesting because I'm just to give a context, I'm Asian. I've been in the British Army for 24 years and I left. And my girlfriend is white, and we always go out walking around Salisbury Plain,
beautiful
Richmond Park, and stuff like that. And we, especially in the summer, we go out a lot of walking. And to be honest, I don't see a lot of ethnic minorities even around Richmond area or Salisbury, and it does feel quite awkward at times. I do wonder. I don't say to my girlfriend, "Where is the rest of our?" kind of people, if you want to call it.
Do you find it a bit unnerving almost? Do you sort of feel a bit like the odd one out?
It can be. But I've, me and my girlfriend always go country pubs and stuff due to where we live. And again, when we go to country pubs, we love our food and stuff like that. And I don't see a lot of ethnic minorities in the pubs in the country around Salisbury and Wiltshire area. So it is quite nerving because I always think, where is everybody else kind of thing?
Yeah. Why do you think it is, Sean?
I think it's genuinely, it's the lifestyle people lead from a young age. I mean, for me, being in the army was like, got me out and about doing things. And it sort of enriched into my DNA. And since I left the army, I still go walking because I just love the countryside. I do have a twin brother who never joined the army. Right. He doesn't go walking or anything.
So are you the only one of your family that would really spend a weekend, you know, or a week, a Sunday, getting out and about into the countryside?
Yeah, 100%. Wow. None of the others do. And I honestly think it's how you're brought up.
It's a cultural thing, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. And if you don't do it from a young age, it would never mean anything to you.
Do you think it matters that so many ethnic minority people like your relatives aren't really spending much time in nature?
I think it does matter because it's obviously to do with your health as well, getting out and about, getting some oxygen down in your lungs. But I can't make them do it, and they're not that way and inclined either. Even I wouldn't even bring it up in a conversation about going for a walk, nice long walk.
What would the response be if you said to your family, let's all go for a like nice hike in the Salisbury Plains this weekend?
There'll be excuses, I think. No, why not to do it kind of thing. But I will try in the future, but I know my gut feeling says it, the answer would be no. So I'll just stick with my girlfriend for the time being.
Fair enough, Sean. Lovely to talk to you for the first time. Thank you very much indeed for getting in touch. It's just cultural differences, isn't it? So does that mean we should just respect people's different cultures? Some people have a sort of history and a culture of going out for hikes and others don't. I don't buy that. I'm with Sean on this. I think there are so many benefits. And you might like to call and tell me about the benefits that you've seen from spending time in nature. But there are so many benefits to getting out and about in nature. Like, the evidence is pretty clear that that is a very good thing for you to do, at least at some points. So if millions of people from ethnic minority backgrounds aren't, Sean says no one's going to force them. But a bit of encouragement, I don't think that's a bad thing. Thank you, Sean. Mark's in Bournemouth in Dorset. Mark?
Yeah, I'm mixed background. My mum's probably one of the OGs around here for me. But what I'm saying is I moved back down here from working in London 3 years ago, and I keep inviting my mates down and they just won't come. And I tried to get them to my wedding that was in the New Forest. And I saw two of them last week after 3 years. I'm not sure I did an event in London. I saw them and they're just all the excuses. And they're like, no. And I explained to them that it can take longer to get from East London to the West End where we worked for many years together than it does to go to Waterloo. Well, it probably takes a long time to get from where they, but I'm just saying that, and they love the idea of it. But I think when people have the time off, if you don't have family, like I'll go across rural areas to visit other family, but they don't have. So when you have a day off, you go and see your family. But if your family, so like the last gentleman was saying quite rightly, it's from a young age. Mm. And my friend Marlon, he's been to more foreign countries than places outside of London. And he's on the flight. He's on the flight out of City Airport or Gatwick or Luton.
But the New Forest is a step too far.
Well, I don't know, but he reckons he's going to come this year. Now, I do work in the hospitality business and I told him that we'll look after him if he comes down. Now, the interesting conversation, because half my family are Muslim, they came over recently. All I would say is that the food choices thing, there's no excuse. There's so many restaurants in the New Forest.
Yeah, I don't
that
think
that will cater for. So I don't want to hear the halal thing, the kosher thing. You got a phone. You're never going to starve, and because
and if
of
if you're worried about that, take a sandwich. I mean, you know, there's ways around it. I don't think it's about the food, Mark. You're right.
But interestingly, Bournemouth Beach, especially around the pandemic, there was a lot of press, which is not far from the New Forest. And the thing is, you know, a lot of people come from Birmingham. A lot of that are happy to sit on the beach for the day. So you do see a massive ethnic might. You see a
that's
massive.
That's interesting.
Con on the beach, which is 2 miles from 3 miles from the forest. It's the most multicultural, and it is beautiful. I know some people in Bournemouth, but, you know, the majority of them, actually, they're more well-behaved than a lot of the English kids.
So, it's going to the beach is a yes, but it's going for a walk, maybe, and a pub lunch that is a no.
Yeah, and right. I think, but they do, like, I've barbecued on the beach with my family that have been visiting from abroad, so that's what we do culturally. Why would you? So I just think I think that this story to me, when I heard it, because this has been going around for a couple of weeks now, or at least a week, 10 days maybe. I've heard flashes of it. I'm just like, this is you don't see the flags on the poles in the New Forest as you're driving through. It's not racist. Like, there's no racism.
It's not because people wouldn't be welcome. It's maybe because they wouldn't be welcome.
I think that maybe. I mean, I had to buy a pair of Wellington boots. when you live in London, you don't. Well, some people have wellies and they wear them in Richmond and Common or whatever. I'm just saying, you know, they're very expensive wellies. I just got some nice Dunlops, or some Peter Snows. But what I'm saying is, like, you don't need all that. Just come.
You don't
down.
Need all the gear. Just go and have a walk. So is it a good thing then? If we're agreeing on the joys of spending time in nature, Mark, is it a good thing that the government is trying to encourage more people from diverse backgrounds to do it?
It's fantastic, but I'd also like to know, maybe the Caravan Association, because they have a lot of touring parks in rural areas, I'd like to know what their membership stats are. Maybe they should be more saying that, you know, enjoy, you know, because maybe, but then you, yeah, it's just interesting, isn't it? The demographics is, but it's not to the point where people are excluded. I want people to, that are listening to say, I've got mixed background. I've lived in rural community down here. I came to London. Yeah. I really enjoyed it, but I'm enjoying being back here. I was in a minority. The stats are changing here. It is slowly changing it, and it is great.
I think it's a good thing. I mean, they've been castigated by parts of the press, but what's to object about? How can you object to a plan to just try and get more people to be a bit more healthy and spend more time in nature? Why is that contentious? Thank you, Mark. Lovely conversation. Lovely to have you on the show. Oliver's on the line in Harlesden tonight. My old friend Oliver. How are you, Oliver?
I'm fine. I find an interesting subject. So, Professor Lee, I wasn't born here. I was born and raised in Europe, in another country, but since I was a kid, since I was born, the village where I was born, we were the only black family, and it was a beautiful experience. And I had this conversation with my mom yesterday, and all of a sudden, there's all different people from a different ethnic background, and I find it a bit strange, to be honest, because I've seen the evolution. So it's a bit weird when you were the only black family for years, and all of a sudden you see all different people from different ethnic background. I can feel what middle-aged or elderly white people can feel, because I feel it as well, you know. So I want the countryside to stay predominantly white, to be honest. I know it's a bit controversial, but...
Why, though? Because there's so much joy to be had. There's so much health benefits. There's so many health benefits to be had.
No, don't bring them all. Just that's my opinion anyway. I mean, I think the countryside can be a sanctuary for middle-aged or elderly white people.
I'm not middle-aged or elderly. Me and my wife love going for a country walk. Loads of young white people do. And some young ethnic minority people do. But not as many. And I think that's a sad thing, because those people are missing out, Oliver, aren't they?
No, you can bring them, but not too many. Not too many. Because all the habits that they got in town, they're going to bring in the countryside.
But what habits? What habits?
It makes people change their habits. You see, even my nephew came to visit my mom, and he said to my mom, Nanny, where do the people all come from? Even him, he was shocked to see all these people.
But what are you saying? Ethnic minority people have worse sort of behaviour than white people?
I don't know.
I'm not having that, Oliver. I don't buy that.
Listen, I had exactly the same thought, but because I was born there, so I can see the changing. It's a weird feeling, to be honest. But that's my opinion.
You're entitled to it, Oliver. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Oliver's saying keep the countryside more white, I think. What do you think? Why is the countryside so white? And is it a good thing that the government is trying to change that? 03456060973. If you are, like Oliver, from an ethnic minority, like background, like Sean as well, why do you think more people from your communities aren't going out walking, hiking, lovely Sunday lunch at a country pub? Even that concept, I guess, Sunday lunch, that's a Christian thing, isn't it? That's a very English tradition. Other people have different traditions. You might have a big Friday night meal, have a big Saturday night meal. Maybe that's just cultural differences that we should just respect and accept. 03456060973. Keep your calls coming in on that. We will talk lots more about why the countryside is so white in a minute. Plus,
rich men have thought they were bigger than governments before, and it never really ends very well for them. If governments act, if they coordinate, if they take it on, they can do it.
UK authorities have opened an investigation into ex-AI tool Grok, while in Paris, the same company's offices have been raided by French police. So just how much trouble is Elon Musk in? We'll look at the details of that in just a couple of minutes as well. It is 11:31. Let's get the latest LBC News headlines first with Daryl Jackson.
It's understood Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has moved out of his home in Windsor to the Sandringham estate in Norfolk. It's reported the former prince left Royal Lodge on Monday night following the release of further files related to convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Andrew's always denied wrongdoing. Earlier, police announced they'd opened an investigation into claims Lord Mandelson passed on market-sensitive information to Epstein when he was Gordon Brown's business secretary in 2009. He will quit the Lords tomorrow. And the Ukrainian president says Russia has used a record number of ballistic missiles to target his country's energy sector. Volodymyr Zelensky says the strike on a power grid during the coldest winter for years breaches an agreement with the United States. LBC weather, rain and hill snow becoming confined to the north tomorrow. Drier further south with some bright spells developing, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Let's come straight back to your calls. Lots of them coming in. Is it a good thing that the government is trying to make the countryside less white and encourage more people from diverse backgrounds to make the most of it and enjoy it? And why is it so white in the first place? Angela's called on both of those, perhaps, from Balham. Angela, hi.
Hi, so Ben, I've moved from Balham, no longer Balham. Now
where are you now? West Sussex,
ironically.
Oh, yes, you've braved the countryside, Angela.
We've braved the countryside, black female. My husband, we're an interracial couple, so we decided to move, pre-retirement plan. It has been a baptism of fire, even though we've always gone to the country. So obviously, just in terms of what the political landscape is, we've been here with lots of some negative neighbours, some positive neighbours. But I suppose the conversation to push is we've always liked country walking. Husband's very outdoorsy, ski, cycles, all that malarkey. So it was like, you know, we knew that we were going to move and we found a great property that needed to be done up that would be half.
You're living the dream, Angela. That's what loads of us dream of doing, isn't it? Little sort of country renovation. Yeah. How's it going?
Well, it hasn't started yet. It's supposed to be starting in about 6 weeks, Ben. I'll talk to you about that another time. But it will be a lovely house when it's all done. But it was, you know, cost effective. But the whole rambling thing, the reality of it is, you know, with all due respect, when we do go out and about, I am probably the only black person in town. You know, I say in jest, but, you know, I've got to grips with that because I'm a civil servant. So I go on projects out of the country where I'm the only black senior leader. So I'm quite seasoned for this, but I do think there are some people a bit sceptical. There are, you know, that people say it might be because you're from the city, so that does come into play, not just about race. But I do think both of them lend themselves to some people who may be a bit just backward in their thinking about
How does that manifest itself, Andrew? How do people sort of treat you differently because of your skin colour?
I'm very assertive just because of what I do as a day job, so I see it more readily than Ian might do, my husband, but obviously he's in tune to it. So, you know, for example, we might go to a nice pub, which we have done on a few occasions. Routinely, he'll be presented with the bill because, you know, that whole thing, a man will pay. Right. Sometimes I'm picking up the tab, then he'll reverse and say, well, my wife's picking up the bill. sometimes is odd looks, because the reality of it is I just think people are just not used to it. It's the demographics, isn't it? When you go into Brighton, which is literally 10 minutes up the road from us, it's a melting pot of ethnicity, cultures and sexualities. And then you come into pockets of some parts of West Sussex that are not as diverse, you know, little. So, you know, it's just like London. So there are pockets of places, just like, you know, areas that people congregate in. And I think people are not used to it. There are rambling groups specifically now for black women, black men and families to go as a collective on trips where they feel more safe. Because at the end of the day, it's about feeling safe. You don't want people to sort of make unkind comments and you're vulnerable in a place where you are not feeling safe and you might have come on a day trip. So I do think there is something to lend itself to this research.
It's
and
a cycle,
people
isn't it?
Saying it's not, it's relevant.
It's
relevant.
A cycle, because if you feel like you do to an extent, Angela, that you will be the sort of only person with your skin colour out and about in a certain area, then even if other people are, you know, they're welcoming, they're not racist, it's a sort of instinctive thing to do, to not want to be the only one.
Absolutely.
I get that completely. So the government effort to try and change that is a good thing.
I do think it's a good thing, but I suppose there's a bit of me thinking, it's a good government effort. You know, there's all these incentives. I say this being a bit liberal as a civil servant, which is not my line of industry, that area, but I don't feel we should have to do it. If anyone wants to go anywhere, they should. So my husband skis. Skiing, for example, another conversation. Skiing is a predominantly white
sport. Very white thing, too.
And it's extremely expensive. A fair to the arts, they are very predominantly white, no disrespect, because some people who are impoverished or maybe have an income can't afford to do the arts. There's a lot of things that lends itself to this.
It's true. When you go to the theatre as well, you go to the theatre in central London, for example, and almost everybody there will, most people there will be white.
That's right.
And you think that's because of price?
It is about price, and I'm not going to plug any, you know, in lots of places.
You can get £20 tickets in a lot of places.
Absolutely, and there's lots of seat-filling companies that you can get in cheap. But again, how does that get advertised? Do people, you know, everyone's got a phone these days, but how do people get access to the arts cheaply? How, you know, rambling is cheap. It's free. You just take a packed lunch on a nice day. But again, it's about doing things differently, isn't it? But, it's, you know, I suppose incentives are all good. It's about making sure they reach the right audience, and it's not just lip service.
It makes complete sense, and it's about actually doing it properly rather than just sort of tokenistically. Thank you, Angela. Really interesting perspective. Lots of light, I think, being there shed on what's going on here. That it's a sort of sense of othering, even if the countryside is welcoming. You know, not many of us would want to go to a setting where we were the only person from our background. I think that's quite natural. Thanks, Angela. James is called from Stansted in Hertfordshire. Hi, James.
Hello. My name's I'm just coming in just to say so many people have moved to the countryside. I was born here, went to school at Stansted. Funny enough, I was thinking the only person that was in my class was a guy called Keith King, and back in the 80s, and he was a black boy. And we all got on with everybody, and there was no animosity. I travelled, went around the world, went to the Caribbean, Australia, lived in a beautiful country.
So you don't think the countryside's racist, James?
To be honest, I think a lot of people fear the cities because of all of the problems that go on in the cities. But
in terms of crime and so on?
Everybody's moved out of the cities because of the crime, maybe. And all I see is white people moved out of the cities. So I don't know why, but the problem that I see
Haven't people, if it's about fleeing crimes in cities, then why aren't people from ethnic minority groups doing the same thing and moving out to the countryside?
I can't answer that.
No, and nor can I, but let's hear from some more people who can. Thank you, James. Good to talk to you. Ryan's in Bromley. Ryan, what do you think's going on here?
Oh, hello.
Hi.
This is a conversation which I've wanted to come up for a long time. I'm of an ethnic origin. I was born in inner city area, but we moved out a long time ago, just on the edge of London. I of ethnic colour and origin, I've had to grow up in the white area predominantly. And it's something which I've had to go through, obviously being, you know, a minority, being by myself in most lessons and whatnot, being the only black person in a country, in a class, you know, and stuff like that. But now growing up as a young man, I've you know, going out into the countryside, going to different pubs and stuff, and it's something which I've realised it's not racism, which is the problem. It's more ignorance, which is more of an, I say, ignorance to a culture and certain wording. So I've had to understand it. I've had to understand that people are coming across, they're not being racist when they're asking certain questions.
Right.
They're curious. But well, can, the way can I,
what sort of
be,
what sort of things have you come across?
Oh, it's people asking me all sorts of random stuff. Like, I have been asked, like, what's it like being the only black person in a room? You know, just outright. But again, I don't take offense to it. It's not something. It's an obvious point. It's not something that I've taken offense to. But it's more people are curious, but it, because they're not around certain cultures, so they try to be careful with the words, but then being careful ends up making it worse.
Right.
There was another point you were talking about how where we want to move out, and you know, people of culture want to move to different areas and fill the countryside more. It's what would stop me from properly moving out to the country, which is something I'd love to do because I grew up in the woods. I love the woods. It's something I love. But the problem would be if I were to have children, I wouldn't want them to go through like being separated and having that feeling that I grew up with, which is being the only person in a classroom.
Yeah.
But, you know, the only black person. You know, I would want my children to be able to feel comfortable and welcome. You know, not that they don't, but it's still a...
Yeah, totally understandably. Understandably.
Yeah. And it's stuff like even simply getting my hair cut. Like, it's a problem that I battle with a lot. It's I can't just simply walk into a barber because my hair, it's an afro, so it has certain requirements. Right. Cut, so that there's problems like that. There was one more point, and I haven't probably gone too long, but
no,
Oliver,
yeah,
I was listening to his point, and I wanted to kind of like clarify a bit on what he was saying, because I understood what he was saying, but I think the wording may have come across like...
How did you interpret it, Ryan?
As someone who understands, and it was also in a similar position to him, I see it as like people in the countryside are very peculiar in their little ways, and they're very in their little bubbles. And I understand that from my understanding of culture in its essence is seeing differences in culture and coming together. And I don't think the way to put loads of people of ethnic origin into a countryside, because I think that would make the people who are already there upset with change. And because change could be seen as like fear, because you don't understand something. Like, people naturally see fear something they don't understand.
Yeah.
So if there was like a load of influx of different cultures, that might be seen as an aggressive move if there's loads of different behaviors.
But I hear what you're saying completely right. I don't think the government is telling people of color to move to the countryside. They're just saying, yeah, look, you know, how can we sort of make it more welcoming so that you feel happy going for a lovely Sunday walk or a Sunday pub lunch, which I think is a good thing, because we know the benefits of getting out into nature are so strong.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And as obviously someone with a, you know, black family, I think one of the other callers actually said, I think it genuinely is down to how you're brought up.
So if how do you change that then? Because if it is a cultural thing, if it's not that people don't feel safe or they don't feel welcome, it's just not the sort of thing that they have ever done with their families, then if you're the government, you think, right, we want to get more people from ethnic minority backgrounds spending more time in the countryside, then what should they be doing, do you think?
It's a difficult one. I think it's something, because obviously you can't just change people's minds. I think you'd have to have a genuine interest to be able to go to it. I think promoting, you know, the countryside is a difficult one, because people are used to what they do. You know, people aren't going to go out of their way, because it seems like a massive effort to go to the countryside. But even as another caller said, they said traveling across London, you know, across the east to west is an hour and a half or so. But if you went an hour and a half south from London, you'd be in, you know, was it South Downs, I think?
Yep. There's beauty. You don't have to go far. There's the Chilterns, there's the South Downs, there's Richmond Park. It's in London. It's not expensive and it's not time consuming to go for a walk in the country. So I don't think this is about resources. Ryan, again, you should loads of light on what it might be about. Thank you very, very much indeed. And for what it's worth, Morgan agrees with you. Ben, I think your caller's framing of this is very good. For example, you wouldn't expect a Jewish person to move to an area where there were no synagogues, or a Christian or a practicing Christian to move somewhere without churches. Very, very true. Very true indeed. But that becomes a cycle, doesn't it? Thanks indeed. Thanks very much indeed for the call, Ryan. More to come on this in just a moment. And we'll get the latest on those investigations into X. The time now, 11:46.
LBC, this morning, on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Lord Mandelson, the latest developments there, possible police involvement, possible passing on of sensitive information. And Catherine, now Baroness McLeod, who was special advisor to Alistair Darling while he was Chancellor at the time when these emails were allegedly passed on.
Well, I don't know if he sold secrets to Epstein. He certainly gave them away, and I think it's reprehensible.
Minister for Secondary Care at the Department of Health. Karen Smith.
I think we're all shocked about the revelations in those emails, and it is right that the Prime Minister took action to make sure the Cabinet Secretary does investigate.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
The Volkswagen Fantabulous, Fandabby-dozy, Fandanger-ding-dong fortnight is here.
Stop. We've been through this, Harry. It's the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Much snappier.
Oh, okay. From the 2nd to the 16th of February, the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight gives you an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit on top of existing offers on the Polo, Golf, Tiguan and our all-electric ID 3, 4 and 5 with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer now. Hurry, offer ends 16th of February. Better?
Perfect.
Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Go on. Leave the never-ending laundry pile. Quiet flat and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC. Message Ben Kentish on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
11:49. Interesting perspective from the Malvern Hills National Landscape. In part of their proposals for increasing the diversity in their area, they say many minority people have no connection to nature in the UK because their parents and their grandparents did not feel safe enough to take them or had other survival preoccupations. In other words, the countryside used to be racist, and that's kind of that's a bit of a hangover today that means people from those backgrounds still don't want to spend time there. And then there's this about a cultural element. While most white English users value solitude and contemplative activities, which the countryside affords, the tendency for ethnic minority people is to prefer social company, brackets, family, friends, schools. So English, white English people like spending more time alone, and therefore a lovely country walk is an appealing idea, whereas people from other cultures, other communities, want to spend time surrounded by people. Is there something in that, do you think? That's what the Malvern Hills National Landscape thinks. Give me a ring if you think that's correct, or maybe there's something else that explains why the countryside's so white. Talk to Christina and Timothy about that in just a moment. First, let's get the very latest on the news that the UK Information Commissioner has opened an investigation into X, specifically over its Grok AI function. Meanwhile, the X offices in Paris have been raided by police. Not a good day for Elon Musk and his company. Will Guyatt joins me, LBC's technology correspondent. Well, let's start with the UK investigation then. What is it and how serious could it be for X?
Well, it's an interesting test, because this is the idea that you'll need to have some kind of consent for use of your images being used on a platform like Grok, being used to create these images. We had these deepfake generated images of people, you know, taking real photos of people and then asking without their express permission, you know, imagine this person in a bikini, or imagine, you know, X, Y or Z, depending on what people were suggesting. And there's some suggestion that it isn't actually covered by current data laws, because without your express consent, they shouldn't be able to manipulate your images. Now, legally, you could argue that famous people might be in the line of fire, but if you're a punter that's been picked on by some trolls, it's quite possible that, you know, this could be established as some kind of law that's been broken.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's quite incredible to that this needs investigating, that people's that images of people or people's personal images are being used in this way as things stand. A lot of people will think, well, why does this need an investigation? Just get on and ban it.
Yeah, it's bonkers. And I wrote something for the LBC website last week. I spoke to Andrew Marr about a week or so ago about a story about an AI meme for a character called Amelia, right, that had been adopted by the right. And I did 4 minutes with Andrew, and I don't think I heard the end of it for a week. You know, absolute abuse, people using my image and doing all sorts of things. Well, I don't know. They were telling me, guess what? I've got scruffy hair and I'm a bit fat. And I knew both of those things. But it was a thing that, you know, various people thought they would repeatedly tell me based on my, reporting of a story. But back to the story we're talking about tonight, because this is where it's important. Mm. This is all moving so quickly. There needs to be sort of pauses and discussions over these things as laws. Because ultimately, if people aren't consenting, why is it okay for them to have their images used
This is the crazy thing, isn't it? And, it's not been a great day all round, has it, for X? Their Paris offices are also being raided by the French authorities. What was that incident about? Well,
yeah, let's not get too excited about the raid bit, because there was probably a filing cabinet and two people in that office in Paris. It's more of a, I think it's more of a show of strength in quotation marks, right, for the home audience. Because something similar has happened in Spain this evening as well, and there weren't many people last time I heard in the X office in Madrid. So this is more, this is down the same line, in that this is about the investigation of these kind of non-consensual images, and follows some investigations in France around the algorithm from last year. But let's not forget, Ben, that France locked up Pavel Durov, the boss of Telegram, for a while, a year or so ago, when he wasn't playing ball. So I don't think they're going to expect to find much in the office in Paris. But the biggest issue here is, I don't know what any of this actually achieves. If the data office in the UK, or if Ofcom decide it's breached the rules, or the EU decides, Elon Musk is going to post more photos of Keir Starmer in a bikini. Yeah. He doesn't take this stuff seriously.
Well, I guess the next step is, if they don't play ball and agree to kind of abide by the rules, then you get into the terrain of, our government's going to start banning these platforms in their countries. But that feels quite a long way off.
Well, let me tell you two things. Elon Musk would launch a virtual private network, a VPN, you know, the sort of thing that persuades that you're in Stockholm and not in Swindon in seconds. And don't forget, that's why he's built Starlink, this satellite broadband service he's got. He's fast becoming, you know, the cheapest provider of high-speed broadband in the UK. And there's a reason for that, because he doesn't want to be regulated. And people don't necessarily see that. I think the one thing, and, you know, the life of Elon Musk, he lives at a billion miles an hour. We used to say a week is a long time in tech, but an hour is a long time in Elon Musk's life. Because this morning, he announced he was bringing XAI, which is the company that owns X and Grok, together with SpaceX, to be the world's largest private company. He's doing that ahead of a sale later this year, or a potential sale, you know, IPO, putting it onto the stock exchange, getting people to invest in it. And I think if that happens, there will be people investing in that company that won't want the level of chaos and noise that Elon Musk is producing from both Grok and from X.
Well, thank you very much. As always, Will Guyatt is, of course, LBC's technology correspondent. Right, 11:56. Before we move on to other matters, namely whether parents should really be taking their children, noisy children, to restaurants, let's talk to Christina in Wokingham about why the countryside's so white. Christina, hi.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
So I think it's so white because it's always been that way. And let's face it, white people are the majority ethnic group in this country. I was born and raised in London and always loved walking, so I guess I am kind of like an exception to the rule. But I would say it was definitely ingrained by my mum. So she would often take me and my brother out for walks. She was really into like fitness and would like do jogging and things, and we'd always be kind of riding our bikes ahead of her. So I was just really kind of from a very young age just brought up to be outdoors in the evenings, and I guess it just stuck with me. So like I love walking, it really kind of helps to de-stress me, and I just think there's so many benefits to walking, and yeah, that's why I don't let it stop me from doing what I love to do.
Completely agree with you, Christina. So given how much joy and meaning and pleasure you get out of it, are you pleased the government is doing more to try and encourage people from communities like yours to follow your lead, really?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. Like, I think why not? But I think they should also encourage everybody to walk, because I walk in other villages as well, and I do know it's like even like in like the Christmas holidays and things, like you only see a few dog walkers out, and that's obviously like white people as well. Like I feel like everybody is not walking enough for the amount of like people that lives in a village or on a development. I feel like there should be more people out and about walking. It's free, it's good for you. So yeah, that's just kind of my observation. And because I love walking so much and I don't have a lot of friends in my social group who actually love walking like myself, I've actually started venturing out with hiking groups. And what has really pleasantly surprised me is the fact that in these walking groups, it's a real nice mixture of people. Like, that really took me by surprise.
In terms of ethnicity?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. In terms of ethnicity, yeah. Like, so you've got, like, representation from every group. I mean, for me, it doesn't really bother me either way. Like, I'm used to kind of being a minority. It's not something I choose to focus on. I guess I haven't been met with too many negative experiences.
Would it bother you if you were the only black woman in that group?
No, okay. It wouldn't, because I've been on walking groups where I have been
because
the only black woman.
You're used to it.
It's just really nice to connect with people who like walking just as much as I do. So for me, I kind of look beyond the skin colour and just connect to people based on the love of walking.
Love it. Love it. Love to hear it. Thank you, Christina. This comes in from Nana. Similar note, I'm a 36-year-old black man living in the countryside. Yes, there's a lack of ethnic minority people where I reside, but I feel very welcomed. You might get occasional stares, but the people are more friendly and say hi to you whenever you are out and about. And I'm not far from Milton Keynes. I'm sorry to hear that bit, Nana. And this is... No, actually, we've got to move on. We're out of time. Interesting conversation, though. Thank you very much for your calls on why the countryside's so white. After the news at 12 o'clock, one TV star causing outrage today after suggesting that parents should stop taking their loud children to nice restaurants and simply pay for a babysitter instead. Have they got a point?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight, Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor is understood to have left Royal Lodge and is now a resident of Norfolk. It's being reported the former prince was evicted over further concerns about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Andrew's always denied any wrongdoing. LBC's Joe Hawkins has more.
It's reported the former prince left the Royal Lodge on Monday night, late in the middle of the night, we understand, and is currently living in a temporary property on the Sandringham estate, while his permanent home there undergoes renovation. Now, Buckingham Palace previously announced that Andrew would leave his home as soon as possible and practicable after he was stripped of his royal titles last year over his links to the paedophile financier.
Well, Prince Edward's become the first member of the royal family to publicly comment on the latest Epstein files. The brother of the King and Andrew told an audience in Dubai that people should remember the victims. The Conservative leader says the Peter Mandelson investigation's a national embarrassment and that the Prime Minister should give evidence if needed. Police are looking into claims Lord Mandelson passed on market-sensitive information to convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. He was Gordon Brown's business secretary at the time in 2009. Kemi Badenoch questioning how Sir Keir Starmer appointed him Britain's ambassador to the US.
He knew all of the allegations, concerns and reports about Peter Mandelson, knew that he was a close friend and associate of a convicted paedophile. And he still gave him the biggest job in the Foreign Office at a time when UK-US relations are at a critical point.
In other news, a 15-year-old boy is due in court this morning after being charged with murder over the stabbing of another teenager in Wiltshire. Shane Hambacher died in hospital after being attacked in Chippenham on Saturday. Plans to scrap the two-child benefit cap have passed the first test in the Commons. MPs backed the proposals with a majority of 354. The Tories and Reform voted to keep the cap in place. It will be further scrutinised, though, by MPs and peers before it can become law. And HMRC estimates around a million people missed Saturday's deadline for filing their self-assessment tax returns. There's an automatic £100 fine for those who don't send their forms back in time. Nearly half a million people filed theirs on the last day. LBC weather, rain and hill snow becoming confined to the north later. Drier further south with some brighter spells developing. Mild in the south, rather cold elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It is 12:03. It is Wednesday morning, and it is Ben Kentish here with you on LBC for another 57 minutes or so. Very good morning for just tuning in. There's a bit of a row that's been raging on social media in the last 24 or so hours after one television star came out and urged parents to stop taking their children to restaurants if they are making too much noise. Now, I'm not sure how I think about this, because as a new parent, I would very much like to take my son, when he's old enough to go and eat in restaurants, to a restaurant. But I'm also of the view that if you are going to do that, then it's on you to make sure that your children are behaving politely and courteously and not disrupting other people who might be in that restaurant or in that hotel. This is the veteran news presenter Jan Leeming, who took to social media to have a bit of a rant, it must be said, about a screaming child, as she put it, spoiling lunch at a Kent hotel where she was enjoying a birthday dinner. She was not impressed when she went to the Pig in the village of Bridge near Canterbury to celebrate a friend's birthday dinner. It's quite a fancy restaurant. And instead of being able to enjoy it, she said it was ruined. Ruined by a screaming child. She wrote this on social media. Lovely ambience. Slightly spoiled by a screaming child at lunch. When I paid and remonstrated, I was treated as though I were the one at fault. She continued, I don't think a traditional pub is the place for children. Also, in the evening, surely young children should be in bed. Cost of babysitting should be factored into the cost of the outing. But when paying the receptionist, she treated me as if though I was out of order and defended parents bringing children to the restaurant. There were three. She concluded, if you can afford to eat there, get a babysitter. And there's been a lot of sort of pushback against those comments from people saying, look, parents have every right to take their kids out for a nice family dinner, even at a nice restaurant in a fancy hotel, if that's where they want to go. Others, though, agreeing. One user said, for example, I'm 100% with you, Jan. Parents these days just don't discipline their children and don't think there is anything wrong with that. Others went even further, saying that children under 12 should be banned from pubs and restaurants. I mean, is that the way we should go? Ban children from pubs and restaurants? As Jan Leeming got a point? That it's becoming too much? That more and more parents simply can't control them or won't control them? They're ruining the experience and the joy of other restaurant goers. And if the parents won't act, then the pubs and the restaurants should. Maybe the government should, if we want this ban. It's really divided opinion, this, and I'm really interested in your thoughts on whether you've got any sympathy with 84-year-old Jan Leeming, whose message is, don't take your kids. If you can afford to go to a nice restaurant, pay for them to get a babysitter instead. Is that your view? Maybe you've had a similar experience of having a lovely meal with friends or family disrupted by screaming toddlers. Or maybe you're of the view that, my goodness, what a bunch of killjoys some of these people are. Kids are kids. Yes, they can be noisy. Yes, they can scream. And yes, they can cry. They've done it since they were, you know, since humans have existed. That's how children have behaved. And if we're now getting to a point as a country where we are advocating, as some people are, banning children from restaurants until they reach the age of 12, then we've completely and utterly lost the plot, haven't we? I think if that's the way we're going, then it's a sad state of affairs that we say, yep, children. I mean, it's sort of going back to children should be seen and not heard, isn't it? At the same time, I do have a bit of sympathy with this idea that parents need to do a better job of actually making sure their kids aren't being disruptive. So tell me your thoughts on this. Should pubs and restaurants ban children? Are too many parents letting their kids run riot at the expense of other people in the restaurant or the pub? Or do people like Jan Leeming and all the others saying, isn't it outrageous, all these children speaking and speaking loudly? Do they just need to sort of get with the times and, you know, lighten up a bit and accept that ultimately kids are going to be kids? And yes, parents can try and control them better, but ultimately that's what children do. They can be loud. They always have been and they always will be. What do you think? 0345 606 0973. And what about ban? What about ban on under 12s in pubs and restaurants? Seriously? Maybe you think it's a good idea. Maybe you're with me that that's a very, very sorry state of affairs. Let's see what Praveena Rudra thinks. She's the assistant opinion editor at the I newspaper. Praveena, very good morning to you. Jan Leeming having a pop then, saying she was very, very frustrated to go out for this lovely meal and have it ruined by these raucous children. Do you think she's got a point?
Look, I get part of what she's coming from. I do think gentle parenting has created a world in which kids' needs and desires to do whatever are indulged, and often at the cost of other people's. But there's something quite sad and bleak about the idea of, I don't know, finding yet another way to separate people who have kids from those who don't. If you're banning children from restaurants, it feels a bit extreme.
It does. And I guess, you know, a lot of parents say, well, you know, we have as much right to go out for a family dinner. And yes, the kids might make a bit of noise, but that's what kids do. But we have that much. We have that right as much as everybody else.
I mean, yeah. And everyone was a kid once, right? Like, it's kind of part. It's part of the real world. And, you know,
some of us still are.
yeah, exactly. And like, also, if you want to avoid that, you get a takeaway, you order out, you get a private chef if you have that much money.
But I guess the sort of flip side to that is, isn't it, is the other people will say, well, hold on, why should I be the one that has to get the takeaway and not go out when you're the ones making the noise? Why can't you be the ones with the kids that stay at home and get the takeaway?
Yeah, and maybe the answer is that, you know, parents need to be better at parenting, and they need to do things like, I don't know, I have been that person who's like had a kid run into them and the parents haven't apologized or said anything, and you're like, hold on. And that's quite often, you know, what waiters are experiencing in a restaurant. But I still think that it feels really kind of dystopian to just say, if you have kids, that's yet another way in which you're not part of the real world, and you can't integrate having kids with normal life.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know what the kind of, you know, the policy repercussions of her statement are, because do we really want to get into a place where some hotels do this already, but restaurants are saying, you know, sorry, but only children over the age of 16. So, you know, parents can't go out for a nice family Sunday lunch or whatever it might be. That's, as you said, it's a pretty sorry state of affairs.
Yeah, and it feels wrong that a few kind of bad eggs, as it were, should spoil it for everyone. And there are midway ideas, right? Like, there's things like having sections in restaurants which are maybe more geared towards families.
That's
or things
idea.
Like that.
Either sort of family area a bit more.
It feels like a quite a slippery slope. to ban kids completely.
I do think you're onto something, though, in terms of, you know, that used to, probably in better times, people would take their kids out for a meal in a restaurant, a nice restaurant perhaps, but if they were misbehaving, strong words would be had, or maybe the meal would be cut short, or one of the parents would take the kids outside and kind of remove them. I wonder if more and more now there is this kind of approach of, don't you dare to, my kids can do what they want and nobody is allowed to tell them otherwise. And maybe that kind of really soft parenting in public settings, at least, has maybe gone a bit far.
Yeah, I feel like maybe the anger is a bit misdirected, where it feels like, for example, with this story, it's almost a bit towards the kids and just the concept of kids being given all these rights at the expense of other people's. But the real problem is that it has to be that way, and it, you know, it didn't used to be like that, I don't think. Yeah, I don't know, especially like if you look at, I think mainland Europe have always had more of a history of kids being in restaurants till late, and they're just them just kind of being integrated with all the other aspects of life. And maybe that happened more because there's slightly more strictness in those situations.
Yeah, I don't think parents 50 years ago would have tolerated a child just sort of sitting there screaming throughout the dinner, because they would have said, you know, look, they're disrupting everybody else. Ultimately, a child's a child. You can't hold them that accountable for their actions. But there would have been perhaps, and this is just this kind of, I wonder if it's part of the sort of erosion we're seeing across the board of just regard and concern for other people, whether it's people blaring out loud music on trains and buses, or just kind of people driving like absolute, you know, lunatics, or or just sort of this kind of just what's the word, selfishness that we're seeing creep in across society, maybe.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely embodied by that kind of stereotype of gentle parenting, where you kind of sit next to your kid who's screaming the place down and just be like, feelings are valid.
Or if you don't like hearing my child scream, then you're free to leave, rather than saying, look, darling, please pipe down a bit. There's lots of people here that you're disturbing.
Yes, exactly. And I can understand how we've tried to move in this direction to create a bit more empathy for children and understanding of concepts like feelings that maybe you didn't have as much 50 years ago, but it's definitely swung too far in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Thank you, Praveena. Praveena Rudra, assistant opinion editor at the I newspaper. What do you think of this? Bans for calls for bans on under 12s in pubs and restaurants? Is that the solution? Should it just be a children-free zone? What do you think? 03456060973, or should all the people making that argument frankly lighten up and accept that children are going to be children? I would be pretty upset if I can't take my son out with my wife for a nice pub lunch until he's 12 years old. For God's sake. I mean, that is absurd, isn't it? But I also take the point that maybe we've gone too far the other way, and parents do need to start just having a little bit more courtesy for the other people who are trying to enjoy a birthday celebration, in this case, or just a quiet drink with a friend, without their kids running right. If my son was going to run around the pub and disrupt everybody else, then I wouldn't take him there, to be quite honest. Or if that started happening, I would take him out the pub. I do think there is something in this kind of increasing lack of regard that we seem to have for each other in all settings. We talked on the show about 6 months ago about people throwing popcorn and talking noisily in theatres. We've talked quite a lot, I have done anyway, about people blaring out music on public transport. And maybe this is just another sort of example of that, another indication of growing trend, really, for people to be, frankly, quite rude and disruptive towards each other. I don't know. Should pubs and restaurants be children-free zones? 0345 6060 973. Of course, to come on that in just a couple of minutes' time.
This is LBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this Air France message. Looking to start your journey with a taste of France? Enjoy in-flight French elegance as Paris, the City of Light, greets you on your way to the world's most remarkable destinations. Starting March the 29th, enjoy twice daily flights from London Gatwick, connecting via Paris to Asia, Africa, and North America. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield,
or do an average week of driving on a single charge. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, charging at home means staying warm indoors while the car powers up. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 12:16. Your call's coming in on this sort of growing campaign, it seems, off the back of Jan Leeming's rant about oblivious parents letting their screaming child spoil her friend's birthday dinner. This growing campaign for pubs and restaurants to ban children. Is that a good idea? Is that the way we want to go? Let's talk to Jane in Preston about it. Oh, hi, Jane.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay, thank you.
I'm glad
you
to
sort
hear
of it, stole my thunder a bit, really, because
oh, I'm
what
sorry.
You said just what you said just before the break was that, you know, if your child was running around and had a little bit of excess energy, you'd take them out.
Yes, I would.
So they could work off the energy out there. Unfortunately, there are way too many parents who don't see the need to do that.
Is that a new problem, Jane, or has it always been thus?
I don't know that it's new, but I think it's getting worse. I mean, I had a lunch not that long ago with two ladies on another table who were sitting there having a lovely lunch, glasses of wine, chatting away, and a small child who was running up and down the restaurant, squealing. You know that squealing noise that some children make?
I do. I'm afraid
constant,
I know it well.
Constant. And when the staff member said to, you know, could you ask your child to sit down? Oh, she'll never sit down, was all the woman said, and went back to her wine and her gossip.
Oh, so the staff actually intervened and said, you're disrupting other customers.
Yeah.
Please, can you know, do something about your child?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And the parent didn't want to know.
She was just like, no.
I think that's outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
I think the poor child, but it just sounds like the child was being completely ignored by the mum.
Absolutely, and that's what she was doing. She wanted attention,
right.
And she wasn't getting it.
So it's bad parenting, and it's completely rude towards you and the other customers.
You know, I mean, we have always taken our daughter out, and she was able to sit still and eat a meal.
Mm.
And we might take a colouring book with us so that she had something to do at the table, but we wouldn't have her running around and screaming her head off.
And if she was being a bit, you know, hyperactive, then you'd take her outside and say,
exactly.
Right, let's go for a walk. But you don't just say, oh, yep, just have a run around the pub, will you?
Yeah, absolutely. We've now got a 4.5-month-old granddaughter, and we take her out. Thank you. She is wonderful. No bias whatsoever.
totally objective, Jane. I'm sure she is. I'm sure she's
absolutely.
Lovely.
But you know what? We have a bottle ready. And if she starts to cry, we know exactly what it is that she needs. And if she's in one of those, I'm not going to stop crying for anything, then we'll pop her out until she's calmed down.
Just to be clear, a bottle of milk you're talking about, not a bottle of Merlot.
No, not a bottle of Merlot.
just to be clear, important caveat. That's one way to go about it. But if we can't trust parents to do the decent thing anymore, Jane, then, you know, is there something in this kind of this clamour for kids to be banned from pubs and restaurants? I think it'd be a very sad state of affairs, but maybe it's necessary.
I think it would be very sad, but if parents don't see that they have a responsibility to teach their children to behave in public, then there is no, you know, what else are restaurants supposed to do?
But most parents do, don't they? A lot do. So if you ban them all, you're punishing the likes of yourself, who, you know, take the colouring book. You wouldn't want to see a ban. So it's the small, it's like the woman who you had to sort of endure during your lunch.
Yeah.
They're ruining
Honestly,
it for everybody else.
I wanted
else.
To drown myself in my soup.
Big bowl
really?
Of soup, sir.
It was terrible. It was
How
terrible.
Big was the soup?
Well, no, I just put my face into the soup and, you know.
Well, that would have got their attention. That would have got the mum's attention, wouldn't it?
Might have stopped the child running around squealing when she saw me covered in soup.
Yeah, but mummy, why is that woman just put her head in some soup?
I don't think mummy would have cared, to be honest.
I fear that might have ended with you being kicked out of the restaurant rather than...
Probably.
Lovely to talk to you, Jane. Jane, proud grandmother in Preston. She's right, isn't she? If parents, you know, if this is the choice now, this is the choice that parents face.
Yeah,
start to parent properly and control your children if they are being disruptive, or ruin it for everybody when restaurants start saying, well, I'm sorry, but we've had to learn the hard way that we simply can't allow parents and children to come. Thank you again, Jane. Reese is calling from Ipswich to carry on the conversation. Morning to you, Reese.
Morning, Ben. How's fatherhood going?
Lovely, Reese. Thank you. Absolutely loving every minute of it.
Good, good.
How about you? Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't you have a little one?
I have. I've got four.
You got more than one little one.
Yeah.
I thought we'd spoken before about parenting stuff. Right. Talk to me about this then. Should your kids be banned from pubs, Reese?
Well, there's two sides to this argument. I mean, in my view, it's a case of I don't think they should be banned completely. I mean, if this is going to be like the new thing where there's going to be a lot more people that are complaining about children in pubs, restaurants, etc., then maybe it could be an idea to maybe instate a adult-only restaurant or pub or bistro or a few environments where there is a choice for people to say, like, okay, there's going to be children there. Should we go there tonight or should we go... Do you know what I mean? So you sort of... You fill it around your means as such, you know? And I think... I don't think a lot of it is, but some of it nowadays, I think, has come from the COVID pandemic, you know, where the children were stuck indoors, the parents were stuck indoors, didn't know what to do, etc., etc. Maybe the parenting slacked, maybe the respect slacked from the kids to the parents to everybody else. And now, obviously, we're all back out in a big, bad world. But the respect level isn't there anymore as to when I was younger. Because I used to go out for, you know, we'd go to the Toby Carvery for a night with the family, with the nan and granddad, whatever, and there's a space outside. And I remember for myself, if I was getting a little bit too high rate, my dad would take me outside for a little while and walk around the garden.
That's just what you do, isn't it? You don't let the child disrupt everybody else because they're a responsible parent and it's on you to stop them.
I mean, we have like a three-strike rule. So if we go out and we're having a meal, whatever, you know, kids start playing up, all right, that's your first sort of warning, second warning, the third time, we'll go out, we'll have a chat away from everybody else so it's not disturbing anybody's meal or their enjoyment or whatever, you know, and we'll have a little chat with the children or I'll have a chat with the children and we'll try and resolve it and go back into that environment again, you know? Yeah,
that's responsible parenting. Do you think it depends on the venue, Reese? I mean, you say, you know, you used to go for a carvery, and we did as well. This restaurant that Jan Leeming is talking about, I've actually been there. It's quite a fancy hotel. We went for one of our anniversaries, I think. Is it the sort of place I would take a toddler? Probably not, because it's, you know, it's quite a sort of swanky place where they probably wouldn't enjoy it. I don't think I'd enjoy having them there. So do you think it depends on the type of the restaurant, whether you should take children there or not?
I think nowadays, yes. But I think, again, it wasn't years ago. You know, there was that sort of boundary level that we all sort of knew. I'm not saying kids don't push their luck, because they all do. But... You know, like there was that boundary of, right, we're acting up too much, that's it, that's that. But nowadays, kids push and push and push and push and push.
But that's because parents let them, isn't it? Isn't that because parents don't draw clear enough boundaries?
Saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's two sides to this argument, you know. Like, we all want to take kids out and get them into the environment, get them into socialising. Like I said, with the COVID thing, maybe they didn't have a lot of socialising, which we all know they didn't. It was just on Zooms and stuff like that. And now we're getting them back into around everybody else, around people and stuff, and it just seems to be that it's all got mixed up and everybody just seems to be lost. And that's what I sort of categorise the young generation nowadays, is that they're just lost, you know. It's just a lost generation. They don't know what to do, the respect, that, you know, the authority respect, everything seems to be...
I do think that is linked to very, very soft parenting. I don't think we can blame the kids. I know you're not, Reese, but I think this does come back to not enough boundaries. And call me a sort of... call me a Philistine, but boundaries and discipline matter. You know, not enforced with sort of aggression, but just having expectations of behaviour and consequences, the right consequences, obviously, when they're not met. Whether that's just a telling off or taking the child outside so they can, you know, let their energy go somewhere in a sort of healthy, conducive way rather than disrupting everybody else. Reese, always a pleasure. Thanks very much indeed for coming on. Let's talk to Alexandra in Manchester this morning. And what about banning kids, Alexandra? I mean, is that going a bit far, do you think? Morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I think it is, because I really found it difficult taking our children out, particularly when they were toddlers. But we kind of pushed through that because I knew it was something that when they were older, I wanted them to know the etiquette of how to eat out and things. Mm. And as a result, I didn't necessarily enjoy going out for food when they were younger, but we kind of pushed through that and it's paid off now. Now we can go, you know, anyway, I took them to a really nice place for afternoon tea recently and they were the only children in there, but they sat so well. They know how to order things. You know, they'll speak to the waiters themselves. They're polite. They don't get out of their seat. You know, they, and it was through that difficult time, it was worth it, the payoff for now. But I went out for a meal with them last week and there was on another table grandparents that had taken their grandchildren out. And I think they were out for a celebration. And they were, I just would say probably one was about 10, 11, maybe one a little bit older. And they sat through the whole meal watching their iPads with the headphones on. And the grandparents tried to kind of communicate with them, but the children were interested in their devices. And I just thought how sad, because again, what we've done with our girls is really push through to make sure they can hold a conversation. You know, even when we're with adults, they're really good at that. They know how to hold a conversation around a table. And, yeah. And but that does take parenting. And yeah, it wasn't always massively enjoyable when they were much younger, but because we did it, it's now paid off.
Yeah. It's about how you do it. And if there had been an instance where they weren't behaving and they were running around screaming, like the case that we're talking about, what would you have done then? Like, would you have left?
I would have done. There was lots of times I had very cold food because, the things you can't do, trying to teach a child to wait for food when they're younger is actually really hard because they're often quite hungry. And yes, I'd have with me a few snacks or whatever while we waited. But often I would have to take them out of the restaurant, go and walk around and, you know, reset them to come back in. And I think that's
what you should do. Exactly. And that's the problem, isn't it? It's not really the children. It's the parents who aren't properly looking after the children.
It is. The only other thing I would say, though, is I think there's a marked difference when you go abroad. We've been, you know, Spain, Tenerife, all those kind of European places. It feels a lot more child-friendly.
What's different? How do they make it child-friendly?
I think the waiters, very much around the food. So, again, like, you know, sometimes my child might say, oh, can I have the sauce on the pasta separate from the pasta, and abroad it always seems like there's no problem. They're very flexible. They're used to having children there up till late. There's often children walking around, whereas I do think, you know, in our country it is a little bit more frowned upon, and it doesn't feel quite as welcoming. And you know, when your children are young and you even at the weaning stage, you know, and they're trying food and things, going out can be quite tough. I think it's something you should do and persevere with because, as I said, it pays off. But it's quite stressful. It probably wasn't very enjoyable for a couple of years for us.
Yeah, but as you say, it paid off because now you've got children who know how to behave in that environment. Comes in, Alexandra, while we've been talking, from Lucy. Take your screaming, undisciplined, unruly brats to McDonald's and let the adults dine in peace. Thoughts?
Well, that's really sad, isn't it? I mean, that's going exactly what I said about, you know, eating abroad. But, you know, the children being able to understand, like, I remember one of my children ordering something and then not liking it and starting to cry. And, you know, we had to talk about trying things and that was okay and how to handle that. And, you know, again, you have to experience these things to be able to behave in a way that we would find socially okay. You know, even things like cutlery, the fact that you got, you know, a starter piece of cutlery and something for a main course, teaching them that. There's a lot of etiquette.
I don't think I knew that until I went to university, Alexandra. Why are there two forks? Why are there two knives? I actually remember somebody at university saying, that's the starter one. So, you know, clearly I didn't have much etiquette.
And if you go to McDonald's, you'll never know that. And, you know, everyone deserves to have, let's be honest, probably taking children out for a nice meal, they're going to experience food that might be better than you can cook at home. You know, I'm quite a good cook, but certainly
you're not competing with a Michelin star chef.
Exactly.
Not yet. Thanks for lovely to talk to you this morning, Alexandra. Thanks very much indeed for the call. This has made me laugh. See what you think of this. This on WhatsApp. Dogs are only allowed in pubs and cafes if they're well behaved and kept on leads. The same should apply to children. It's a suggestion, isn't it? Don't ban them, just keep them on leads. Thank you for that. That did make me chuckle. And thank you as well for your call, Alexandra. More calls coming in just a moment on whether we should... What do we do about it? It's clearly a problem. Enough people are texting and WhatsApping in to say, yep, I had a meal completely disrupted, all the pleasure and enjoyment taken out of it by some unruly little toddler. It's clearly an issue. So what do we do about it? Ban them? Get tough on parents? Kick the parents out? Or do we just accept that children are going to be children and there's not much we can do about it? So better for everyone if we just grin and bear it. Keep your calls coming in on 03456060973. Lots more to come on that. Plus,
my daughter had an awful time in primary school, was left without a school before attending secondary. She is now just starting to kind of settle and respond because she's receiving the right support for her needs.
A new survey this morning finds that one in three autistic young people missed at least 2 weeks of school since the start of term in September. What is going on and why is the education system clearly not working as it should be for children with autism? We'll talk more about that after news headlines. 12:31 the time. Here's Daryl.
It's understood Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor's moved from Royal Lodge and is now a resident of Norfolk. The palace first made the announcement last October following the Epstein-linked allegations against the former prince, which he's always denied. Lord Mandelson will face a full criminal investigation into allegations that he leaked market-sensitive information from Downing Street to Jeffrey Epstein. The former US ambassador, who's denied wrongdoing, is stepping down from the House of Lords today. And a 15-year-old will appear in court later, charged with murdering another teenager in Wiltshire. Shane Hambacher-Chair died in hospital after being attacked in Chippenham on Saturday. LBC weather, rain and hill snow becoming confined to the north later, drier further south as some brighter spells developing, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this Air France message. Looking to start your journey with a taste of France? Enjoy in-flight French elegance as Paris, the city of light, greets you on your way to the world's most remarkable destinations. Starting March the 29th, enjoy twice daily flights from London Gatwick, connecting via Paris to Asia, Africa, and North America. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
For the nappies, peekaboos, and tea parties. Mess, tantrums, and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures, and Chinese. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
So, close your eyes. Picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wickes to design our new kitchen.
At Wickes, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wickes Kitchen Sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms apply.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
This is LBC. Message Ben Kentish on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
12:34 is the time. Ben Kentish here on LBC. We're talking about the newsreader, veteran, legendary newsreader, who has come out and said that she thinks that the parents of children who were being disruptive in restaurants shouldn't have taken them in the first place. As Jan Leeming this is, and instead should have forked out and got a babysitter. If you can afford to eat in nice restaurants, you can afford to pay a babysitter to look after your children, says Jan Leeming. Has she got a point? Or are the people responding actually saying, nope, that's not enough. Under 12 should be banned from pubs and restaurants. Do you agree with them, perhaps? Benedict's called from East Grinstead this evening, or this morning, I should say. Morning, Benedict.
Good morning, Ben. How are you doing?
Really well, sir. Thank you. How about you?
Yes, good, thank you. Yeah, good.
Good. Banning kids, that's a bit far, Benedict, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think she's totally right. I mean, can you imagine, you know, you're looking after kids all week, you want to go out and have a nice treat, go to or a restaurant and chill out so you don't have to listen to the kids that you've had all day, all week. you're spending lots of money, and then you go there and you're sitting there about to have your first mouthful of food, and you hear this scream running across. I mean, how's that going to feel? Come on.
What if your treat is taking the kids out for a nice meal at the end of the week? A lovely family Sunday lunch.
Well, yeah, you take them to the right places. Take them to a Toby Jug or a McDonald's, as the other woman said, but don't take them to a pub or...
Why can't you go for a family roast in a pub?
Well, because I think a pub should be for adults. I mean, I can tell you a story. You know, when I was 14,
yeah,
I sat out the pub. I would be taken to the pub by my parents. I wasn't allowed in the pub in the era of my parenthood and my childhood. You weren't allowed in at a certain age. So I would sit outside, and they would say, well, I'll get you a Coke. And I remember having a straw and a Coca-Cola, a straw, and a packet of cheese and onion crisps. And I'd sit there for an hour and a half. I'd be looking through the window, still waiting for them. In those days, they're all smoking, so the smoke was coming out the doors, and I'm kind of looking in. Then my mum might come out and say, oh, hang on, we're just having one more. And she'd bring out another packet of crisps, and I'd be out there for another hour and a half.
Well, it's just sitting by yourself for 3 hours outside a pub.
Yeah, I swear on my life, yeah.
Do you know what? My dad had a very similar experience. I don't doubt it for a minute, Benedict. Try that now, you'd probably get done for child abuse.
Well, you probably would, but it taught me that when I go in there and I see these kids there, I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, I mean, they should have, you know.
You wouldn't want them sitting outside like you were for those 3 hours?
No, of course I could. No, of course I wouldn't. But I think the moral of the story is, yeah, do get a babysitter, leave them at home, and let the adults go and have their time, you know, where they want to chill
out.
But
what about families that want to go together as a family? I mean, I think a lot of adults don't want to just hang out with other adults. They like going out with their children.
Yeah, well, yes, yeah, I totally accept that if they go out and they behave and they're quiet and they sit and
that's
act, you know, in a proper way, I have no problem with that. And I took my kids out at the age of 14, 15, but they would, if they made a noise, I'd tell them, look, you're not doing that. If you're doing that, we're not going out again. And then they learn how to behave.
That's why I don't think a ban is the answer. The answer is surely, it is what
you
do.
Oh, not a ban. No, I totally agree. No ban, but just learn and teach them
parents
how to behave.
Parents need to
absolutely
learn a little bit more respect for other people.
I think that's the solution
here. Thank you, Benedict. I mean, yeah, and we shouldn't need a ban if more parents were or encouraging / forcing their children to behave in a way that is not disruptive to others, which I think all parents should be doing. Obviously, kids can be noisy and they can cry, and of course, but if they're screaming and running around, then they shouldn't be there. You should take them outside. You should take them home, as Benedict says. But no, not a ban for me. More of your calls to come on whether we should be banning children. Seriously? Some people seem to think we should be. Banning children from pubs and restaurants in just a moment. First, though, serious matters to turn to. It's been revealed this morning that a third, 1 in 3 autistic pupils missed at least 2 weeks of school since the school year started, only back in September. So what's that? We're looking at sort of 4 or 5 months now. And in that period alone, 1 in 3 autistic pupils has missed at least a fortnight of school. It's a concern, isn't it? It's a concern given what we know is going on in the school system right now when it comes to children with special needs. Let's talk about it with Steve Slavin, author of Looking for Normal, Autism and Other Complicated Stuff, an autistic boy who beat the odds. Steve, good to have you with us this morning. What's your response to these findings?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, based on my own experiences and also the experiences I see of many young people. And there are several reasons. I've actually noted down a few key points here. A reason the young person might not want to go to school or take time off school is there's a lot of social anxiety. So, for example, a young person might not understand social rules, and this might lead to bullying, for example. Not being able to process information the teacher gives, the way the other children can lead to low self-esteem and depression. And then there's the sensory challenges that can also play a part. If it's a very noisy classroom, the young person might find it much harder to take the information in and also be oversensitive to light and just a general noisy environment. And if there's not a quiet place for that young person to go to just relax a bit, it can result in some quite challenging behaviour.
So is it more a reflection of just how difficult school can be for children with autism, rather than a kind of sign that actually mainstream schools right now are not doing enough to make it a kind of accessible, welcoming, safe place for pupils who are neurodiverse?
Yeah, I think there's probably so many challenges that schools have to face these days, and so many targets that they need to hit, that they may lose a few young people with special needs along the way.
Mm. I mean, so it's not, I mean, yes, we know schools are under pressure, but it's sort of, it's not good enough, really, is it? You know, the parents of children who do have conditions like autism shouldn't have to be kind of thinking, my goodness, the only way we'll get a good education for our child is to go private. State schools, I appreciate the pressures on them, but, you know, we shouldn't sort of tolerate it, I guess.
I suppose if there's more money in the system and there's a high level of education and less pressure on teachers, I think those are the things that will make a difference. I think there needs to be more flexibility in the system as well, so that young people who have different learning styles can really flourish. There seem to be a sort of a one-size-fits-all at the moment.
Right.
And if you have a different learning style, you know, then
you fall through the cracks, yeah.
You lose out.
And there's been a lot said, there's a lot of discussion, isn't there, you know, at the moment about special educational needs disability provision and just how badly it's lacking in so many areas. And then you get findings like this and you kind of, I mean, from what you're saying, Steve, you know, you're right to kind of, we're right to put two and two together and say, well, in part, this is because autistic children just aren't getting the support that they need in the classroom enough.
Yeah. I mean, I dare say there are some schools that I've been to, actually, that I've seen myself, where they have like a unit attached to the main school where people with autism can actually go and they can learn at their own pace and thrive quite well. But I think trying to integrate the majority of autistic young people into the mainstream classes and lessons, I think that's going to be very challenging.
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
What was your experience of school like, Steve, if I may ask?
Yeah, well, all of the above, all of the things I've actually said to you is very much my own experience.
Anything stand out?
Yeah.
Memories and sort of difficulties?
I think the main thing was not being able to process what a teacher is saying.
Right.
So it was just like another language to me. And I could see all the other children around me sort of basically writing down the answers to questions, and I wouldn't have a clue. So I would not want to go to school the following day because I knew that I wasn't going to get it. And then, you know, that results in the low self-esteem and depression. So I went to primary school, and then because I was refusing school so much, and this is a long time ago, this is way back in the 70s, I was actually sent off to a boarding school that could allow me to work at my own pace and find my own way of doing things. But that was a different time, I think. I'm not sure that there's money or flexibility.
You think it was better back then?
Sorry?
You think things were better back then, perhaps?
I think perhaps there was less pressure on teachers to meet targets. I think the target should be, is a young person achieving all they could achieve? So that should be the target.
Thank you, Steve, for your perspective. Really interesting insight. Steve Slavin, author of Looking for Normal, Autism and Other Complicated Stuff, An Autistic Boy Who Beat the Odds. If that's your experience, interesting, or your children's perhaps, let me know. 03456060. 973 for your calls or your WhatsApps. 884850 for your texts. Loads of calls coming in as well on our main conversation this hour about children in restaurants and whether those two things should go together. More on that right after this.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Richard Spur.
A woman who had a necklace stolen on a bus has said the driver who retrieved it didn't deserve to be sacked. But when have you taken the law into your own hands? And the former Prince Andrew has been booted out of Royal Lodge. But should more be done to make him atone for the past?
Richard Spur at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Let's play a game of which feels more like home. A hard, wipe clean chair, or your favourite squishy spot next to mittens, a beige tray meal, or a Sunday roast where everyone's fighting over the gravy. We know which one we'd choose. At Bluebird Care, our expertly trained care professionals help you keep the routines and home comforts that make life yours, quirks and all. For heartfelt home care that puts you first, visit bluebirdcare.co.uk. It's good to be home.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine, past storybook castles, or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply, over 50s only.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, stop working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with Ben Kentish.
It is 12:46. This is quite a nice idea. This is Sam. Ben, maybe have a curfew for child dinners. No children after 7 p.m. Reservation booking says, when booking, it should say that dinners with children must leave before 8:30, says Sam in Cambridge. That's a solution, isn't it? So if people want to go and have a child-free dinner, there's a time when they can do it. If families want to go, then they can go earlier. And let's be honest, what toddler really should be in a pub after 8:30 p.m? That sounds relatively reasonable to me. Talk to Richard in Woolwich about it in just a moment. First, though, Sean's calling from Belfast. Sean, you wanted to pick up the conversation we were just having about autism and the challenges of the school system. Please, sir.
Yeah, well, the challenges are unbelievable. I don't know if it's the same in the whole UK. I just switched the radio on there. Just first thing I heard was you talking about autism and... Mm. The school system, my daughter, who's just meant to have started secondary school in the past there last September, and she's done, I think, of all the hours, she's done about a full day in school, and I had to calculate all the amount of time in school. And basically, she had a hard time in primary school, and we requested help from the education authority to help her, like, because she has trouble, like, understand what's being asked of her and the demands of school. She struggles with it and obviously causes her anxiety and it turns out meltdown. So we obviously asked the education board for some sort of assistant, and we keep getting denied. We keep coming back and saying, no, you've been rejected. She doesn't need an assistant. And then we're going back to them saying, but she's not going to school. She won't go to school. And she needs some sort of like somebody there to help her. To help maybe get the anxiety, and they keep just refusing again, and then you have to appeal, and the amount of paperwork is unbelievable that you have to fill in.
You're going through appeals at the moment, are you?
Yeah, it's like everything is geared to try and just stop you from like applying, stop you from appealing. They make it so complicated.
Sean, I've heard this story from so many parents of children with conditions like autism, and it's the same story every time. It's based, as you say, it's local authorities just having a sort of blanket no policy. Yeah. And then only when you fight tooth and nail do they go, oh, well, all right, maybe that's something we can look at. And it really shouldn't be that hard for parents.
Yeah, and then they offer you, like, even the day after, I know a few other parents who've just talked to you who have got advice of how to sort of go about challenging the decisions, and whenever they do, maybe fighting, and they offer you something, they offer you the most basic of packages, you know. It's all about cost savings, basically. You can see it's about cost savings.
So those statistics that we were just talking about, the number of days that autistic children have missed at school, do you think, from your experience, that's because schools just aren't doing enough to keep autistic children there and support them?
I think the teachers can only do so much. I think the teachers are busy in themselves, looking after, like, whatever it may be, 20 to 30 kids in a class. So they haven't got time to sit with a certain child, or maybe my daughter in particular, in my experience, to sit and, like, break down the information that they're being shown.
to help her. They just haven't got
the teachers are doing their best, but ultimately, yeah, they don't have enough resources to. Oh, Sean, yeah. I hope you get there. I know it's an arduous and it's a long journey.
Yeah,
I've spoken to a lot of parents who got there in the end, but you shouldn't have to wait years and fight as hard as you have to.
I mean, by the time we get anywhere, it's going to be the first full year of school.
It's an absolute travesty. It's absolutely outrageous. The children with conditions like autism in this country are being so spectacularly failed by the system. Sean, keep us posted, won't you? I really, really do hope you get there for your sake and for hers. You take care of yourself, Sean. Calling from Belfast to talk about the travesty that is special education needs provision in this country right now. 10 to 1 the time. Michael's called from Stevenage to pick up our other conversation this hour. The row that's broken out on social media today about whether children should be banned from pubs, or at the very least, Michael, whether parents need to do more to stop them disrupting other customers in pubs and restaurants. Good morning to you.
Morning, how are you?
I'm good, Michael, thank you. You used to own a pub, did you?
I did, yeah. I sold it a few years ago, about 3 years ago now. I had it for 5 years. But it was a family pub. It wasn't your typical, it wasn't like a, you know, I don't know what you'd call it, spit and sawdust pub. It was a nice pub that did nice pub food. Mm. Nothing, it wasn't fancy, it wasn't sort of run down. It was just sort of in between. But we really, really focused on it being a family pub because it's about community. It's about a place for everyone to go. I couldn't think. I mean, well, I did have a situation once where there was kids in the pub, obviously with their parents, and a few of the old boys, you know, typical old boys that sit at the bar drinking ale. They started complaining to me, saying, why are there kids in the pub? They need to get out and this, that and the other. And this is like 6:30, 7 o'clock.
Hmm.
And I was like, no, it says family pub. Yep. We are a family pub. That's it, bottom line. There are pubs that you wouldn't... I think a lot of this boils down to the parent. Not necessarily, I don't think it's for a blanket rule to be put in place. There are pubs that you just wouldn't take your kids. There are pubs that you know you wouldn't be very welcome with children.
Same with restaurants, right? There's really sort of fancy adult restaurants where it would be very, very odd for you to take your toddler. And then there's all sorts of other restaurants where I don't think anyone would bat an eyelid.
Exactly. And I completely agree. I mean, you kind of know a pub that wants children there with, you know, families and stuff. Normally they've got a little play park in the garden or something like that, you know. If you're going to go to a fine dining restaurant with a child that might not be able to particularly behave very well at the table or be screaming and stuff like that, as a parent, it's more of an embarrassing sort of thing.
Yeah, or a sports bar or something. As you say, there's types of pubs where I wouldn't dream of taking kids, but there's a lot that I would. Did you have any issues with children being disrupted, Michael? Was it a kind of common problem?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes we did. But a lot of the time, the parents would deal with it appropriately.
Yeah.
Sometimes I had to step in, and because you could see it didn't get to the point of customers complaining, but you could see that, being honest, the kids were getting on the customers' nerves, mm-hmm. some of them.
And what would you do?
I stepped in and, you know, you just politely ask the customer. Bear in mind, we're a local pub. It's a community. So you know a lot of your customers. Mm. You know a lot of the kids. And half the time, the parents would be like, well, you better behave, otherwise I'll tell the landlord, he'll tell you off. You know, typical stuff like that.
The kids were more scared of you than mum and dad.
Yeah, but I would go over to mum and dad, like, come on, quiet down.
And were they generally kind of receptive to that? Did they generally
100%,
listen?
100%. Okay. There were occasions where it wasn't as easy as that.
And
so
on those occasions, did you ever have to kick them out, or what was your response?
No, I wouldn't kick them out, because ultimately we were a family pub.
Yeah.
We had, so summer, for example, we'd put bouncy castles up in the garden and that, and if people really didn't like kids in pubs, they just wouldn't come to my pub, which was absolutely
fine.
Sounds
like a great pub.
Appeal to those.
Why did you sell it, Michael?
I sold it on the back end of lockdown. So right. When we reopened, we had a really, really great start. And it was right off the right time. I wanted to start a new venture, not in pubs, in law. So I went down that route. But it was great. And I think as well, I remember from when I was growing up as a kid, I was in pubs and whatever, social clubs and stuff. And you meet so many friends and socialising and stuff like that. I think it's great for kids, don't get me wrong, not till silly o'clock in the morning or certain pubs where people are just sort of screaming and shouting and swearing.
Well, just
and
on that, what did you think that WhatsApp a couple of minutes ago from Sam in Cambridge, that you should have a sort of curfew? So yes to kids before 8:30, but a no to after to children in restaurants after that.
I think it's really difficult to say. I don't think it's easy to put a blanket rule. I think it just depends on the venue. That's the biggest point.
Yeah, because you're
the pub.
Yeah, got you. Your family pub is very different to a different pub down the road that caters to a different clientele. Great conversation. Thank you, Michael. Lovely call. Let's talk to Richard in Woolwich about it. Oh, what do you think, Richard? Michael there said it's not a big problem. As long as, ask the parents to keep their children reasonably well-behaved and job done.
Well done. Hello, Ben. And well, yeah, you ask the parents, but they don't. And so I say, well done, Jan and Lehman, really, because it does annoy me. I do like adult only spaces. I want time where I can have business meetings or just
kind of have.
Yeah, I take lots of clients to pubs, and when those kind of, fidgety kids running around all over the place, it's annoying.
But Richard, respectfully, all the kids are going to say, well, maybe you should take your business meetings elsewhere. There's plenty of places you can have a business meeting. Why does it have to be in a family pub?
Well, it's not... Okay, well, I don't go to family pubs, but that's the point. I mean, I don't specifically target family pubs, but the problem is it's getting everywhere. And, Ben, I know, I appreciate now you're a family man, and, by the way, complete congratulations to you.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate it.
And I've had a family myself, so I'm not a complete kind of grudge. But I'm now kind of retired, and I just want some space. But what I really wanted to say is, it's not just restaurants. I mean, I can add to the list. So swimming baths, please. After 9 o'clock, don't take your kids swimming. I mean, please. Let's
9 o'clock?
Night? Yeah, no. I've been in swimming baths where there's kind of like rowdy kids at 9 o'clock plus at night.
Shouldn't they be in bed?
They should be in bed, right? And the other thing, Ben, the most outrageous one is classical concerts. There is now a movement of parents taking their toddlers to classical concerts. It's horrible for the kids, and it's horrible for us.
I'm all for parents getting their children into culture, including classical music, great, but toddler, I'm with you on that one, Richard. Toddlers is probably a bit young, because as you say, not found the kids, they're not going to enjoy sitting to Mozart for 2 hours, are they? Thank you, Richard, and thank you for the kind words as well. Good to have you with us this morning. Final call, I think, from my show tonight, at least, is Lucia in Cobham, who's a brand new caller. So welcome, Lucia. Morning.
Oh, hiya. Morning. I kind of have a lot to say about this. I hear in a lot of people kind of talking about kids and screaming and parenting. I think I haven't got any children myself, but I have a younger brother.
Yeah.
And he is neurodivergent. He is heavily autistic.
Right.
And I always say that there's places and there's things that we take them to and there's places we wouldn't take them to. And people talk about hard parenting. That's the reason why we think that kids are screaming and they're kind of unruly in these kind of places. But my brother does very well from having these interactions and going to the pub and speaking to children and being around children, which he's very, 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 very... he likes being to himself and he doesn't like speaking to other children usually, but it's a place where he kind of is able to enjoy himself. And the other day we took him to the pub and he snatched a man's drink out of his hand and that he doesn't... We then did the hard job of parenting and we say, no, you can't do that. And then the screaming happens and the crying happens and you feel the anxiety of being everyone staring in the pub. And I feel like there's places where that is allowed. And I feel like a pub is one of them places. I feel like we wouldn't take him to a restaurant like Rocker in London because you wouldn't dream of kind of interrupting such a luxury meal.
Yeah, you're not going to take him to the Ritz.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I feel like hearing moody people moan about children, when it's like there's times and there's places, and if you decide to have a business meeting in a pub, then maybe you should bring that to a private hotel. that there's places where you can do that with no children interruption. And a pub on a Sunday, when people are having their Sunday lunch,
yep,
probably isn't the time for
you
that.
You can expect children to be there, can't you? Particularly on a Sunday. If it's 10 p.m. on a Saturday night and there's a toddler running around, I think you're within your right to say, what on earth is he or she doing here? But the rest of the week, Sunday lunch, early evening, I'm with you, Lucia. I think it's a sad state of affairs if we're talking about banning children. Maybe we will need to be a little bit more tolerant. But yes, parents perhaps should need to be a little bit more compassionate towards other customers as well. Thank you, Lucia, for the first call. Hope we'll have another conversation very soon. I am out of time for tonight, though. Thank you very much for your company. Tonight's show, as always, on both Global Player and the LBC app, where you can catch up with all the latest news, videos and opinion. You can get it for free as well from your app store right now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Ian Payne right now. Richard Spur.
Good morning. A woman whose necklace was stolen by a bus passenger who was then knocked unconscious by the driver has said she's extremely grateful to him for intervening in what was a terrifying situation, but he lost his job. When have you taken the law into your own hands? First, though, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has moved out of his home in the estate to Sandringham in Norfolk as police assessed new claims that a woman was sent to the former Duke by Jeffrey Epstein in 2010. He was last seen in Windsor on Monday riding on horseback and later driving away from the castle, waving at passers-by. So this morning, should more have been done earlier to hold Andrew to account for the past? And what should now happen both to him and to Sarah Ferguson? 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. It's understood Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has moved out of his home in Windsor to the Sandringham estate in Norfolk. It's reported the former prince left Royal Lodge on Monday night following the release of further files related to convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Andrew's always denied any wrongdoing. Ben Maguire, Shadow Attorney General for the Liberal Democrats, told LBC there needs to be a full inquiry.
There has to be a thorough investigation. It's not just Peter Mandelson. It's not just the former prince, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. This goes across many, many establishment figures. And it's really quite sickening, but it's also really disturbing. We need to make sure this never happens again.
The Conservatives are expected to try to force the release of papers about Lord Mandelson later. They're demanding to know how he was vetted ahead of his appointment as ambassador to the United States. Police have confirmed they've opened an investigation into claims he leaked